Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, this is Jake Gibb. You're in the net live.
This is Taiba Hanif Park, and you are in the net live.
Aloha, this is Mike Lambert, and you are in the net live.
Lloyd Ball, and you're on the net live.
Ryan Malarm, and you're in the net live.
Hey, this is Heather Ballin, and you're live in the net. Nope, that was totally wrong.
Hey, this is Karch Kira, and you're in the net live with Willie and Barney.
All right. Oh, man, my voice is bad. Welcome, everybody. The Net Live, middle of May. Jeremy, it was a rough Sunday for me, but I've made it here.
You look good.
Oh, my goodness.
Your birthday weekend.
It's birthday weekend, my birthday weekend, my first son's birthday week, my second son's birthday week coming up now, both on a Wednesday. I'm kind of sandwiched in between. We had a little sushi party last night with some friends, and sake and other libations were flowing. About 11:30, 12 o'clock, I had to shut it down.
I believe your email this morning said, I should not party on Sundays.
No, remind me that that's not a good idea anymore. Welcome, everybody, to the Net Live here on thevolleyballnetwork.com. We appreciate you joining us. It is the 16th of May, 2011. We do have a lot to cover today. It didn't seem like it at first, but now there's all kinds of things to cover. The AVP had on their website May 15th. That was their moniker, May 15th. For the fans, for the players, for the game, and now there is some information out there about what the new AVP looks like, who might be involved, how they might approach the sport. We're going to talk about that. Al Skates is out at UCLA. That's big news. We're going to talk a little bit about that and who might replace him. The final college poll is out with the conclusion of the men's season having come down, and we also have a few guests calling in light of the AVP and what's gone down. We have owner of the NVL, Albert Hanneman, going to join us again. Talked to him a few times recently, but we definitely want to hear his reaction to the reemergence of what has been the premier beach brand for the last 25 years.
I'm sure he's getting a lot of phone calls and texts and emails this morning.
Yeah, I want to know what this means for his efforts, what this means for his brand that he's trying to build.
Yeah.
Because presumably he's trying to be the preeminent brand of the beach. So if the regular brand, the 25-year-old brand, comes back in some form, is it possible for them to cooperate and work together? Because that seems to be the moniker of the AVP, and we'll get further into it, but that seems to be what they want to do, is cooperate for the game, for the players, for the fans. They're kind of taking an alternate tact to what it's been before.
Well, you got to change up what you did before. So
yeah, because you lost like $150 million.
Can't be good for anybody.
No. So we're going to have Albert Hanneman on here. We're also going to have Corona Light Wide Open person, Steve Lindecki. Now, I'm not sure how to characterize Steve as an owner, as the promoter. I think he has an ownership stake along with Karch. Let's ask our normal co-host, who today is at home, has a background, not so with Jeremy and I, but he is on the phone with us, Chris Geeter McGee. Geeter, do you know?
Gentlemen.
Do you know Lindecki's actual role? Is he a part owner of the Corona Light Wide Open?
He is part owner with Billy Berger and Karch.
Okay. Just for clarification on that.
He runs the Elevation Group, which he's a managing partner in the Elevation Group, which runs the Corona Wide Open Tour. So Steve and Billy and Karch are partners.
Okay, so they're all in charge of the Corona Light Wide Open. Corona Wide Open, I keep saying Corona Light because they do a lot with Corona Light, but Corona Wide Open Tour that has been successful, I think, is probably the only tour that's making money out there. It's been around for a number of years. We're going to talk to Steve Lindecki about the same issues with Hanneman, because the AVP has several links to the Corona Light Wide Open Tour on their site and talks a lot about that tour. There's some interesting stuff going on there. So we have all three of those gentlemen are going to be joining us. I'm looking forward to talking to Tom Hoff. Tom Hoff, Olympic gold medalist, my roommate for a number of years.
When is Hoff coming on?
Hoff is coming on at 11:30. He's going
to
be talking.
I'm going to have to call back.
Transition into real life for him. As he put it, he's a working shift now.
And I'm going to assume, since he was your roommate, you had some good questions.
We'll have some interesting information.
Okay.
It'll all be StarCraft related for those nerds out there that are really into it. But, a little bit going on in the volleyball world, so all that upcoming. A couple other things to talk about. Stacy Sikora, I've reached out to Stacy to see if we can get her on the program here in the next few weeks, depending upon her condition, but find out more about that bus accident, her continued rehab. She is back here in the United States and rehabbing at a center. An article I read on USA Volleyball, she's actually rehabbing in a center, so her injuries obviously pretty severe from what initially happened, 3 days in a medically induced coma and now some rehab. We hope that Stacy's making progress. We're endeavoring to talk to her personally sometime here in the near future. Women's and men's national teams back together. I was down there on Friday. Big AVCA convention going on, coaches convention, a little bit smaller than the one that goes on in Kansas City, but there were a few hundred coaches in the gym watching national team practice for the women, then moving over, watching national team practice for the men. Pretty neat because they had Hugh McCutcheon mic'd up during practice, so he's explaining some stuff to the coaches and what they're doing and what they're after and giving direction to everybody out there on the floor. Pretty neat experience, I think, if you're a coach, to be able to walk in and have a couple hundred of you there watching the best coach in the United States get it done in the gym and how he does that. Pretty neat experience. So the gym was packed, all kinds of people, talked to a bunch of different folks in the volleyball world, and I got a chance to watch both teams a little bit. There are 30-some-odd players on the women's side.
Wow.
38, I think it is, was the number I remember hearing. It's insane.
All fighting hard for a spot.
Yeah. Fighting hard for a spot. It sounds like Geeter's, you know, junior club practice, 38 girls and Geeter.
Well, I'll tell you what, Barney, we do have some pretty intense practices, but 38 is even a reach for us.
We're talking four full courts, virtually, of kids, you know, playing drills, not six-on-six. You could run three complete six-on-sixes and still have some subs. Absolutely nuts, but... yeah, really good competition going on there. I hear that they're going to cut down to 24 pretty soon. But even that, 24 is still a big training number. I think a good, solid training group at that level is about 18 to 20. At 24, you're still big. There's still a lot of people in the gym, a lot of people wiping the floor, calling lines for the main 12. But it's interesting. It's a great time for women's volleyball in this country, I think, to be able to have that much talent, legitimately 38 women that belong in the gym, talking about national team or B team or some of the other options that are out there for events. It's really an exciting time for volleyball in the United States.
And while you were there, the players that were back in the States for the first time, they seemed happy to be back, excited to be back on their home soil or getting some food they like.
Oh, they don't want to spend more time in Russia.
Not to.
Or Brazil or Europe, Italy. No, they're happy to be back. You're always happy to be back.
Sleep in your own bed.
Yeah, have a burrito. A burrito is the biggest thing. Yeah, there's no Mexican food in Europe at all, period. In Vienna, there was one Mexican restaurant. Got really excited. It's called Something Cantina. Go down to the Something Cantina, and you go in. It looks pretty authentic. You know, like somebody went to a store in Mexico and bought out everything. Put it on the walls, the cool lighting, the tile, everything. You order up some food. We ordered some sort of enchilada. And the enchilada came. It looked right. You cut into it, and there were frozen veggies in the enchilada. I'm talking the lima bean pea carrot mix in an enchilada. Ay, who does that? It's not authentic. That's as close as you can get. You can get some refried beans in the international section, but Mexican food definitely very high on the list for everyone who trains in Southern California when they come back. Geecho, what do you have going today that you're not here in the home court with us?
I will be on my way to the third annual Mike Whitmarsh Memorial Golf Tournament. We started it 2009, a couple months after Mike passed away, and big success, and all the proceeds go to the Mike Whitmarsh Foundation, and Al Jantz, who was one of Whitmarsh's dear friends and now works for Oakley, Oakley Golf and Oakley Volleyball, helped puts it on with Cindy, his wife, and his mom Sharon, and we have a great time. We have an auction, and I do that part and MC the auction afterwards, and we have a great time, and all the money goes towards the Mike Whitmarsh Foundation. So, yeah, it's a good opportunity for a lot of us to get together that don't get to see each other much anymore, you know, probably once a year, to be honest with you, and it's a great time. We have some great memories, tell some great stories, and, you know, for a lot of us, especially me, you know, I miss Mike pretty much every day. You know, there's not a day that goes by where I don't at least think about him or wish he was around where I could reach out to him, especially when, you know, you need advice or something like that. He was always, you know, that guy for me. So it's going to be a great day out there. Really looking forward to seeing everybody. Going to miss you guys, of course, but I'm looking forward to hitting that little white ball around.
How do people get involved with that particular tournament? How do you get folks in there for the auction and playing?
You know, I think we're going to talk about that today a little bit because I think there's a huge part of the volleyball community that doesn't really know about it, and I think we just didn't have the manpower to ever get it out. You know what I mean? Like, it's always kind of a late thing. Like, hey, what's the date? And Al sends out the email, and we kind of spread it around. But we're going to talk about that today because I think, you know, the volleyball community, as we've seen in the past when there's been something unfortunate that has happened or something tragic, I think the volleyball community is great at helping and reaching out. I think Witty touched a lot of lives. So when I report back to you next time, I'm gonna have a link and stuff for you guys to, you know, if people wanted to donate or just get involved or come next year. I feel like it's getting to that point where it's going to be a lot more organized and open to the public.
Seems like an event that could become bigger where people could want to play in it, come and be a part of the auction. And you guys play a scramble format down there?
Yeah, scramble format, and, you know, there's the golf part, and then there's the dinner part and the auction part, and anybody can come to that. It's at Talega Golf Course on San Clemente, just off the 5 Freeway, and it starts at about, I think, 5 o'clock. And it's really cool because, you know, there's pictures of Witty and great memorabilia stuff, and, you know, it's kind of a who's who that shows up, and it's really fun. You know, I think the Whitmarsh stories get going and people have a great time. There's a guy named Kelly James, who's a great musician. He came last year and he just, you know, he's one of those guys that can just play any song. He can freestyle. He, you know, Whitmarsh's daughters are there. He asked their names and all of a sudden he made up a rap about them. It's kind of the hit of the whole thing. It's a real great moment. And, you know, all the wives come and people, kids and stuff late. So it's starting to get real fun. And I think you're right. I think it's something that I think, you know, the volleyball world and community would like to be a part of.
Very cool, very cool. We're sorry we're missing you here, but that sounds like a terrific event, and we'll look forward to more information as to how to get involved. You're talking about
all the great
names in the world of volleyball. One of the great names, one of the biggest names, is about to move on to a new phase of his life. Al Skates announced that he is going to retire. Al Skates, the head coach of the men's program at UCLA, an iconic individual in the world of volleyball. Of course, I think he's won, more national championships than any other coach in any sport. Is that accurate, Geeter? I think that's...
Yeah, I mean, what is it, 21? I don't know it off the top of my head, but I think more than any other coach in the history of athletics, college sports.
Yeah, just a remarkable...
I mean, if you think about it, Kevin, I mean... He's been to the Final Four, too. You got to add on a few more, too, if you're just talking Final Four appearances. When Al Skates, you know, I think everyone knew this day was coming, but to finally hear that, hey, he's got one more year, I think that's a cool thing because everyone can send him off the right way, give him the rocking chairs, make the speeches, and I think it'll be real fun. And, of course, the debate on who is going to be the next UCLA coach is going to be fun for us.
Al Skates was entering his 49th season. 49th. Season for those of you counting at home, and 19 NCAA titles. That was coming in to this year. He had his 19th title against Penn State in 2006, last one. So this next year will be an even 50. I can't remember I've ever seen that on a profile. Experience 49th year.
Yeah, it's pretty insane. He started as a youngster and built that program. I mean, think about it. Andy Banikowski coached UCLA for 40 or so, and he played for Al.
Unbelievable. Al Skates, 1,217 wins against 282 losses coming into this season.
It says on the chat room he has 19 NCAA titles, but I think he's got a couple more before it was called an NCAA title. So he's won a lot of bling.
Yeah, absolutely remarkable, man. And you touched on it there, Geeter. This sets off a derby. Who is going to be the next head coach for the UC Bruins?
Sorry.
I think there's
a couple names, Barney, if I can just jump in. Sorry, I think there's a couple names. Obviously, when I'm not sitting in front of you, it's tough to jump in and take over. Sorry about that. But, you know, I think Sprah has always been the guy that everyone has said will take over for Al. My wrinkle in that is that Sprah has a great deal at UCI, and I know he loves it and he lives there. So it's going to take something, I think, to get John away. That's just my personal take, but he is definitely at the top of the list. Karch's name will be at the top of that list. It sets up perfectly for after the 2012 London Games. UCLA is going to need a coach. Is that going to be Karch? He's obviously going to be one of the guys that is talked about. I was talking to some friends about this. You know who else should be on that list? And people said, no, he's not a UCLA guy. It's Rick McLaughlin. Look what he's done at UC Santa Barbara. I think UCLA would be crazy not to have him on a short list, at least interview Rick. I don't know what Rick's plans are, but if I'm UCLA, I'm going after the best guys, and I think he now belongs in that conversation. And I also want to put Nygaard on that list, because if you think about it, Nygs will have 2 years as an assistant at USC when Al does leave. And, you know, Nygaard's a UCLA guy, won two national championships, and was a two-time NCAA Player of the Year. And UCLA does like to keep it in the family.
Yeah, you're right about that. And another name that came to mind was Ricky. Talk about, what's his name? Setter. I can't think of his last name right now. It wasn't written down on here.
I just keep thinking Ricky Bobby when you said Ricky.
No.
I'm not helping your call.
No. AVP professional. Come on. Help me out here, Geeter.
What's that, buddy?
Beach player from UCLA. Ricky.
Finnegan Smith.
No.
Finnegan Smith, Ricky Lutes.
Ricky Lutes. Thank you very much. God, yeah. Lutes. I could not think of Lutes' last name. I think Ricky
Lutes. Yeah, Lutes is a coach at UCSD women now, and he helps run. Right. You know, he's coaching San Diego Volleyball Club, and he's in the women's game, but... Yeah, I think Ricky will definitely put his name in the hat. There's not a question about it.
I hadn't thought of Karch. I think Sullivan is a possibility, even though he's just made the move to Texas. I think Sparrow, yeah, he was. I think Sparrow was on that track, except Al stayed a couple of years too long. And now John is very, very happy down there at Irvine. They have done a lot to keep him there, a lot to build that program. I don't see him leaving that program for another UC program. I see him maybe taking a break to go to the national team. He could. I think he's probably the next head coach, or the guy I want to be the next head coach down there for the national team following Allen Knipe as he returns to Long Beach State. But I don't see him going to UCLA over UCI. He's kind of built his own thing. And why go from your successful own business, your own brand, to then follow in the footsteps of a legend like Al Skates? I just don't see why that makes any sense for him. I think Nygaard is an interesting call. That's an interesting name in there. And I think another one is Seeley. Even though he's with the women's program now, would he want the men's program instead? And would that be possible to move over?
Well, I'll tell you this, Barney, and it'd be interesting to have Sondheimer in here. And I think there's the one issue that can change this whole thing is how much is UCLA going to pay? Men's volleyball does not pay that much. UCLA was known for not paying a lot in the women's game. So Seeley, would he want to take a pay cut to be in the men's game? Sprah, does he want to take a pay cut? What would Karch demand? I mean, those are huge questions and huge issues. And maybe UCLA is ready to step up. Maybe they're not. I don't know what UCLA can afford, but, you know, they're known for not being able to pay that much. And I just can't see in this day and age, you know, guys want to take the pay cut for the job unless it's someone that's just, you know, wants UCLA because it's UCLA and every year you're going to be in the hunt and all that kind of stuff that goes along with it, the prestige of it.
Well, what about the assistant coaches? Brian Roper been there for a very, very long time as assistant coach. I think he's a guy who really wants to have that. It's his 21st year of experience. So,
you know, it's funny, Barney, you know, Roper's always the guy that's been there, at least since you and I've been around and before. And, you know, he's always just seen as the assistant coach, and I think everyone's always felt like if Al left mid-year or Al left unexpectedly, I think Roper would be that guy to get the interim coach like Fisher did back in the Michigan days in hoops, and it's happened a few other times, you know. But I don't know. I think now that they have a year to think about it and a year to plan, I think it's going to be a huge search. Roper's obviously going to get an interview, and how much say is Skates going to have? But you know UCLA usually likes to keep it in the family. So you imagine everyone that's been a big part of UCLA is going to come out of the woodwork, including like a St. John Smith type guy.
Rofer could end up being the Brian Shaw of the whole situation, as Brian Shaw was the supposed heir apparent with the Lakers. Yeah, but now a lot of rumblings about Brian Shaw not getting that job that I think a year ago had Phil Jackson had left the Lakers. Brian Shaw would have slipped right into that position. But given what's happened in the past year, I don't think that would be the case. And so Rofer may be a guy who's just been in that situation too long, and you say maybe looking for a change.
I'll tell you what, if you get Sonheimer on the show, tell him if they give me 150, I'll go there, win a title in a few years, and get out.
There you go. I think they'd have a lot of takers that were a little more experienced and seasoned than anyone in this room. Hey, let's stay with men's college for just a second because I want to talk about the last poll. It came out a little bit after the show last week. Of course, number one ranked Ohio State. But I want to know why two votes for number one went to USC. And who are the two morons out there who are voting USC number one? Because, by the way, don't know if you know this, don't know if you followed the end of the season, they did not win. USC did not win anything this year. They did not win their conference. They did not win the national title. How can they be the number one ranked team in the world, in the nation?
For that alone, Barney, there should be no end of the season poll in any sport. I don't think I've ever looked at one. Once the national championship is played, I didn't even know there was an end of the season poll for any sport. I mean, football, college football, I think people hang their hat on it, and you always kind of look to see, you know, what's happening because of the controversies and stuff like that. And it is a big deal to finish in the top 10, but college hoops, college baseball, that, who cares? After the national championship, it's over. Ohio State finished number one. Santa Barbara should be two, and that's it. There shouldn't even be a 3, 4, 5, 6, 7.
I'll give you 3 and 4 because they were in the tournament. But I'm putting SC maybe down at number 4. Didn't win a conference, didn't win the national title, went out first round in the finals. Done. Goodbye. You're lucky to get 4th. Maybe you get 6th. So, yeah, I don't know who those guys are out there. I mean, we kind of lambasted it. As it turns out, our friend Mark Pavlik over there at Penn State for voting number one Ohio State for a while. But that turned out okay. At least you had an ongoing concern. Here, there has been a clear champion, and someone still thinks that USC, actually two people still think that USC should be number one.
Yeah, if I won the tournament and somebody said, you're not number one, I'd be upset about that.
Oh, you just call them a moron and you'll move on with your life.
That's true. I'd still be upset.
No more airtime for stupid things.
Jay Roche, that's like you winning the DJ National Championship and then someone voting, you know, someone else in.
Yes, and again, I would not be pleased, and I would smash a record over their head.
Love it. Well, listen, fellas, I got to get it going here, but
that's it. That's
I'll try to call back. I'm going to get Fanoy in the car here, so maybe we can hop on a little later. It sounds like you got a packed show, though, so I'll try to listen in.
We've got Albert Hanneman coming on. You want to talk to him and Steve Lendecki talking about the AVP and the effects there for those two different organizations.
Yeah, Jeremy, ask Albert if he plans on giving us a job when they're local. I mean, he should probably reach out to us, huh?
I can tell you the answer to that, but I'll ask him.
You're not going to stay on the phone for that? You're going to make
what's the answer, Jay Roche?
Ask for you? Is he your agent now? Are you taking a percentage?
Yeah, I haven't gotten asked that yet, so we'll see how the first event goes, and then we'll ask him after that. How about that?
Okay. All right. Tell Albert I love him, and good luck this weekend.
All right, buddy.
All right. Thanks, Geeter.
Later, bud.
The Net Live here on the volleyballnetwork.com. Kevin, DJ Roche sitting in. We've got a lot of guests coming up. Albert Hanneman from the NVL, Steve Lendecki from the Corona Wide Open Tour, and gold medalist Tom Hoff, all going to be in-house here today. We're glad you're here. We'll be right back.
Your path. I don't switch up, I just laugh. Put my kicks up on they desk, unaffected by they threats. Then get busy on they ass. See, that's how that shut down made me. That's how my daddy raised me. That glycerin may not be gold, don't let nobody play me. If you are my homeboy, you never have to pay me. Go on and put your hands up. Sometimes it's hard, you stand up. L-U-P, the man.
We're net live here on the volleyballnetwork.com. Chris Geeter McGee is out, but yes, the show goes on. If you want to take our show anywhere during the week, get us on iTunes. It's a free podcast. Just search volleyball or search the net live inside of the iTunes store. You can download 2 years worth of shows here. You can go back all the way to 2009 and figure out what was going on in the sport back then. If you want to communicate with us during the week, thenetlive@gmail.com is the way to do it. If you want to talk to us here on the show live when we're on, it's 347-677-1525. Hey, we mentioned at the early part of the program that the AVP is back. And I use that term with maybe a question mark at the end, like Ron Burgundy. Is back?
Is back.
They are, have returned. They had April or May 15th announcement to make, and they made that at May 15th, 12:59 p.m., so a lot of people, like myself, logged on during the day yesterday and looked for information on the AVP, and it was still that same thing. And you thought, okay, here we go. Here's more of the same. April or May 15th comes and goes, and nothing's up.
Yeah, I got a lot of phone calls and texts yesterday, like, what's happening? Like, I'm supposed to know, or like, I was the one doing the website.
Right, right. Well, we're going to get into some of the details here in just a second, but I want to get to our first guest, because the AVP brand has been around for 25 years. And this man made his living on the AVP Tour from 1993 until 2010, in addition to his other business interests. And now with the AVP having gone out of business, he started his own tour, the NVL, the National Volleyball League. He's been on this show several times. He's the owner of Volleyball Vacations. And at this point, we got to call him a friend of the program.
Yes.
We're pleased to be joined once again by Albert Hanneman. Welcome back into the Net Live.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
You should practically have your own segment on this show by now, Albie. We've talked to you so much in the last couple of weeks.
He would take it, just in case you're wondering.
Well, you guys are doing great things, man. And like I said, you're welcome anytime at any event. We'll go live from our events.
Nice. That's what I like to hear. We've got to follow up on that, DJ. Make a note.
Noted.
Make a note on our long list here. Follow up with Albert about appearances.
Hey, how's Jeremy doing, by the way, without Geeter? I miss him on the show right now.
Well, his hair looks good. There's nobody here pumping him up constantly about what a great DJ he is and how handsome he is. So we'll see how he does by the end of the show. I feel like he comes in with a lot of confidence, but without Geeter constantly building him up, see if he can maintain it over 2 hours.
Well, that's why Geeter and I are a good team. We work out.
That's right. So, Albert, this AVP announcement came out just apparently midnight for everyone here. And you're on the East Coast now. I don't know if it was 3 a.m. You were up watching your computer to see what was going on with the AVP. But I know you've had a chance now to read a little bit about what they've put up, and they mentioned your tour specifically in some of their literature. They have links to your tour and the tour dates. What is your reaction to what you've seen thus far?
Well, you know, I think that I'm pretty much surprised, like everybody else, but also a bit irritated because, you know, I don't know what the purpose is. I have tried to reach Hans Stolfus for over a month and a half to see what's going on without any callback or text or anything. I don't know what was happening. And apparently it looks like we're partnering with them on this site, which is not a good thing. Our attorneys called us this morning, and there's a lot of issues with this. We're trying to do good things and get a tour going, and then all of a sudden you have the ADP throwing things up, or Hanzi specifically, and so we're just trying to get to the bottom of it. And, you know, we want tournaments. I love the ADP. I was there for 18 years, and, you know, it's not around anymore, so I don't understand why to confuse everyone and what the purpose is. I wondered if you guys can tell me that.
Yeah, the confusion is what I wondered about, and when I was reading what's going on here, the AVP is asserting that they want to support the sport in so many different forms. They want to support the other tours that are out there, but at the same time, they make a good point at saying they are the preeminent brand of beach volleyball, and that people think of beach volleyball, they actually think specifically of the AVP. So you, as the owner of the NVL and trying to build a new brand, and presumably you're trying to take over that top spot and that notoriety for beach volleyball with the NVL. How do you feel about this other logo and this other brand coming in on that that territory once again?
Well, it's not right, Barney. I mean, if you keep refer to they as if there's an organization still, and there's not. So I'd just like to find out, you know, who Hansi specifically is working with and why. I mean, I don't know. I played against the guy for many years, and we've had a good rapport, and then all of a sudden I can't get a hold of him. So it's tough for us as a brand. You know, we're trying to do everything, you know, good and bring it back, and, you know, it's hard enough after what, you know, the position we were left in August. So, you know, I don't know what to come about this whole thing. It's really confusing, but, you know, we're doing good things. We're in Baltimore. We just had an amazing event with disabled kids in D.C. on Saturday, and now we're in Baltimore and, you know, going to all the leagues this week. We have all our pros out here, and, you know, and we have Annette Davis and Rutledge and the Ingles, and, you know, they're going, they're busting their butt, you know, promoting the tour, and it's exciting to have the support we have. But, you know, these little things like this, it's just a speed bump for us, but we still would like an explanation just because it's confusing the fans in the marketplace.
Yeah, so that linking that's done on their side and the inclusion of your name or your tour's name with some of the literature that's on the AVP site, that was all done without your knowledge?
I have no idea about this or why it's happening, and that absolutely has to be taken off. I mean, that's the first problem. I mean, I'd like to see what the plan is and have a conversation about it before we just all of a sudden are assumed to be partnering with, you know, the AVP website and whatever the plan is with that. So yeah, I mean, it's, I don't know, how do you guys feel about it? I'm not real happy about it, but we're going to continue doing what we're doing. But, you know, I mean, they're getting themselves in a tough situation here by claiming partnerships with everybody.
Albert, you have an event coming up this weekend. What can fans expect differently at an NVL event than they would at any other beach volleyball event that they've been to in the past 18 years when you were on tour?
Well, what's cool, Jeremy, is, you know, we have a hosting families program, and over 40 of the players out of 64 that are going to be there are actually staying at the homes of a lot of these fans. So you can imagine, you know, the experience that the players and the fans are going to have. So, you know, it's a really cool thing that we're adding to it. One of the big things we have, we're going to be streaming live four courts. So everybody can go to the NVL.com and watch, you know, every game all day, Friday and Saturday, and then it'll be archived on our site as well, so they can go back and watch it. You know, our media team is amazing. We're going to shoot our own TV show, and we're just, you know, kind of really going after the lifestyle of the sport and how interesting the pros are and the integration of them into what the fans are doing. And, you know, it's just more of making this thing a community effort, and proud of what we're doing so far and the support that we're getting.
Albert, you talked about the players staying at homes. How did families get involved with that? And what amount of success have you had so far? I know it's only been a couple of days, but has anyone gotten thrown out?
thrown out of where?
The homes. Are they staying with the...
No, man. We had a huge dinner at one of my friends' houses here in Baltimore last night, and, you know, steak and lobster, and it was amazing. And, you know, it's a cool thing. You know, I've been staying with the fans for probably over 10 years. I got sick of hotels. I'm sure you hated hotels after a while, Barney, but it was one of the things that I really appreciated. Met most of them on volleyball vacations, and then just became good friends with them. And a lot of the pros, you know, became friends with them as well. So it's just something that I thought would be a cool element to add, you know, save money for the players, one, and then add an experience for everybody. So it's been working out really well.
Very cool. Well, listen, give us the start time and the place for the tournament in Baltimore for those that are local there, and then also, once again, the website where people can watch the live streaming.
Yeah, it's going to be at Rash Field, which is Baltimore Beach. Awesome facility. Todd Webster has been running that, and I think it's the biggest amateur leagues in the U.S., but that'll be 8 o'clock to 6 o'clock on Friday. And then on Saturday with Don Abramson, we have the event going at the infield in the Preakness, and that'll be from 8 to 5. The men's final is at 2 o'clock, and the women's final is at 3:30. And then go to the NVL.com, and you guys can all watch it. And appreciate all the support out there.
Awesome. Albert Hanneman, thank you very much for joining us once again. We'll endeavor to get to the bottom of the AVP. We're trying to get somebody to come on and talk about it. They're refusing so far. We'll be interested to hear how far you get with them.
Yeah, and I'll let you guys know, and appreciate it again. Jeremy, good job, man. You have more than just a face for radio. You're a good-looking kid, so good luck over there.
Thanks, buddy. Appreciate the shout-out.
Everyone picking it up for here. Thanks, Albie.
All right, take care, guys. Thanks.
All right. Well, that's interesting, isn't it, Jeremy?
That he pumped me up?
No, that Albert did not give permission.
I find it odd. I mean, I'm encouraged that the AVP wants to work with everybody, but yeah. When you're saying you are working with everybody, you're just putting some misinformation out there that's confusing. People are calling me, asking me. I'm like, I have no idea what you're talking about.
Yeah, and I've been texting back and forth with some sources inside the AVP and around the AVP and trying to find out exactly what's happening. And it's interesting. They don't want to do any publicity right now. They're on a media blackout. They want to just kind of put the information out there and see where it lands. I'm not sure that's the best plan. But let's give you a little more information on the AVP and what they're saying. So the AVP had up on their website May 15th big announcement. The big announcement was that the AVP is being reinvented. It's being brought back as an organization that at this point takes points for players from all other events, from the FIVB, from the Corona Wide Open, from the NVL, from those finishes. They're going to take points and be awarded points in the AVP system. Then at the end of the year, the AVP is going to hold an end-of-the-year tournament in Huntington Beach in October. And they're going to have four teams, only four teams per gender, come into this tournament. You're going to play at Huntington Beach on one court, and it's going to be winner-take-all. The number I've heard was $100,000 or $125,000. Which is a good number.
I'll take it.
That'll get the players to show up.
Yep.
But someone else said to me, well, one of the players had quoted to them that I don't really think I can beat Phil and Todd, so why am I even going to play? But I think that will fade. If you can play the lottery, if you can get hot for a couple of matches, you can take home $125,000.
I would still take a shot at it.
Absolutely.
I mean, what do you have to lose?
Well, and that was the other question was, okay, with given the history of the AVP, given the way things went bad, would you go back as a player and play on the AVP tour? Or tour, play in the AVP event?
Money's a big deal.
My response was yes. If there's money there, the players will play because the players play and they play for money and that's what they do. It really doesn't matter who's putting up the cash as long as it spends the same, whether it's coming from the AVP, the FIVB, the NVL, or the Corona Wide Open.
This could be an interesting summer, Kevin.
I'm not sure how this is going to work out, but you can check out AVP.com. Go to the front page there. They have a video done by a friend of the show, Josh Glazebrook.
A really good video, too. I watched it this morning.
I like the video a lot. It's about John Hyde, and it's about the death of the sport, or the death of the tour. Not the sport, the death of the tour last year and the reemergence now. There's a couple articles on there talking about a new road and some blogs talking about different things that are going on with the AVP and news. So they're trying. And the thing I keep hearing from them is that they want to cooperate. They want to promote the sport. And that means everybody. But we touched on it with Albert. Albert's trying to build a brand. He's trying to fill the void left by the AVP. Now the AVP is coming back and saying they want to be a part of that void, but while still promoting Albert's brand. Now, the AVP says they're going to have one event this year, four events next year, and six the following year. That's their goal. So if you're running six events, and Albert at this point is running five or six events with the NBL, he obviously would like to expand if he has success with his events this year. You're now a competitor for dates, for locations, for players.
For sponsorship money.
Sponsors, which is what drives the whole thing.
Yep. DJs.
DJs. That might work out well for you. How can that work? How can that be? I mean, we've talked about on this show with Hugh McCutcheon the spirit of co-opetition. It works inside of a team. You can have co-opetition. You're all going for the same goal, and you get your salary each month no matter what. But here, I guess the same goal is increasing the visibility of the sport, increasing the popularity of beach volleyball. Okay, I get that. But you can't compete for the same sponsors. You can't be trying to chop each other's paychecks out. There's only so many sponsors out there that are going to support this sport.
You and I starting a new world tour and wanting to cooperate with FIVB or wanting them to cooperate with us.
Right.
I don't think they would do it.
Squash us like bugs is what they would do. Sue us out of existence before we even got started.
The one thing that stood out to me on the AVP website, obviously because I'm a music guy, they said they're going to have beached theme music all day long. And I'm curious what beach theme music is.
Why are you? You're the one who's supposed to be able to answer that. You're our music guy.
No,
I can,
but
question.
Are you going to play Jack Johnson all day long?
Can you play to Jack Johnson?
Or is it like, does that mean it's the Beach Boys all day long?
One of the things that strikes me about this whole thing, and along those lines, is they're trying to sort of quell some of the criticism from before, talk about how the model didn't work, and talk about how they're reinventing the model and the new scene that they hope to generate.
Well, they have to acknowledge what happened in the past. You can't just ignore it. You have to bring it up. You have to say the right things. And you hope that everybody has good intentions.
I'm sure they have good intentions. I'm also sure the owner might be in the bathroom when he calls you. Nick Lewin, still the owner of the AVP, bought it out of bankruptcy with his parent company.
That still doesn't make – I don't understand how that works.
Yeah, I'm not in the world of high finance. But apparently you can do that if you have a previous corporation that you own that owned the AVP, and then you have another corporation that owned that corporation. You can buy your own corporation out of receivership. Something close to that happened. Not sure if that makes any sense. I need a flow chart. Something close to that occurred, and Nick Lewin still owns the AVP, but he's put some other people in charge. And I've heard some quotes that it'll be successful as long as Nick Lewin isn't involved. As long as he isn't making decisions. Let some volleyball people make decisions. A little bit like some of these football owners that you always hope will let the GM make football decisions and not go all Al Davis.
But if it's your money, I mean, if I'm putting up that much money, I'm going to be involved.
Right.
Yeah. So how are you not involved when you're putting that much money in there?
You have to have some influence.
Of course.
Unless you absolutely trust the person you put in charge.
True.
Now, there's very few people involved with this now. There's three or four people at the top. I think Albert mentioned it, that Hans Stolfus is involved integrally with what's happening.
I'm looking forward to hearing from Hans on this. I know eventually he will speak up.
Somebody has to.
They can't just be keep putting information on the website. Somebody's got to talk about
it. No, and I can't sit here and spend 15 minutes reading their entire page to you over the air. I'm looking at it. There's lots of stuff talking about the AVP championships, talking about promoter-based events rather than a central-based event. They want to cooperate with promoters to run individual events. The new operational structure. They go make a big point of saying they're not top-heavy. They're not going to put $10 million in offices and salaries for executives, as has been the case before when under previous ownership. First class philosophy. Right, there's lots of stuff here that's easy to write. I think it's harder to implement.
Of course.
They have an interesting idea for their one event in Huntington. I think it's a very interesting idea to have a single event winner take all. It makes for kind of an interesting atmosphere. Another thing that makes for interesting atmosphere is the way that they've put it together. Quote, a Mediterranean style festival atmosphere. With live beach theme music. There you go.
Told you.
There's your beach theme music. What is a Mediterranean style festival?
I've never been there, apparently, so I don't know.
Will there be kebab?
Hopefully.
Will there be baklava? Because I would like some of that. But the event will be in October. No actual date set, just the month. There will be one court, and this is going to be berm. They're going to ring the court with a berm of sand. Rather than setting up a stadium, it's going to be a natural look. They will have a cathedral-shaped berm instead of a metal stadium. So people are going to sit up along the berm and watch the action. I think that's a rather interesting, intimate feel. I can't wait till the first time that ball goes up above the berm and gets blown across the beach.
Or when somebody tosses up high enough that a fan just grabs it.
It looks cool. I got to be honest, it looks cool. It looks like a neat idea. I see a little DJ platform, but I don't see a mini Rocher with with spiky hair on it. There's some tents and a little beach area where people presumably would be under some palapas, canopies, the VIP section watching the event go on. So it looks cool. It looks like a cloudy day in October in Huntington in this photo. I'm not sure why that is. You'd think it would be sunny and hot.
Maybe it's early in the morning.
It could be. Waiting for that fog to burn off.
Exactly.
So they have some unique ideas. But I still don't understand how you're not a competitor. If you're running events, you're a competitor. If you were just a promotional structure, promoting all those other events, Corona Wide Open, NVL.
You're simply a competitor just because you're going after the same money that the other events are going after with the same sponsors. I mean, unless you get a billionaire owner that comes in and he's putting in all the money, you're competing.
Yeah, and they've put this event after the other tours are done, right? They've moved it till after the other tours are done.
Which they have to.
Right, but why wouldn't you, if you're the NVL, why wouldn't you want to run an event in that time period if it's successful? All of a sudden you're going to find the NVL moving right into that space.
Again, it's going to be an interesting summer.
It's going to be something else. I'm still sticking to my three-year timeline, and we're about 6 months into it. 3 years till it shakes out on the beach.
Oh, yeah.
We find out who's going to be the dominant player.
It's a marathon, not a sprint.
What the tour is going to look like. What the real sponsorship dollar level is that's appropriate for the sport. Because we really don't know that. We really don't know what the actual value of this sport is. I know that the players have an expectation of what it was, both post-2000 and pre-2000. We're never going back to the days of the top players making $500,000 in prize money. Not coming back. I think that environment is gone forever. Can we get back to where the top players are making $300,000 in prize money or $200,000 in prize money alone? I have a hard time believing that even. And you're talking about dominant players, too. You'd have to win every tournament.
Phil and Todd, Kerry, Misty.
Right. And I'm talking about domestically. I mean, internationally, they're making pretty good money. People are creeping to that 150 already, 180 on the FIVB tour. But it's a healthier tour. I'm talking about domestically. The AVP was strictly domestic, and they were doling out prize money in great numbers. Post-2000, not so great, but they had built it to a point, but they were going through capital. So I don't think we've really found the actual level that this sport can be supported at, will be supported at by sponsors with actual dollars. I think we're still waiting for that to happen. I know the NVL appears to have investors, and they're operating. I don't think they're operating at a cash positive basis this year.
No, I think Albert said that they're not making money this year, but the money is in the bank for the prize money.
They have the money.
They have the money. Yeah.
Right, but it's at an operational loss.
Correct.
For the year.
Correct.
It's investors putting into a brand to say, we believe this is going to be profitable a couple of years down the road.
Like any business, everybody loses money.
Absolutely.
To start.
Absolutely. So nothing wrong with that. I just wonder if it's going to work. We're going to ask Steve Lindecki when he comes on shortly here on the program about the Corona Wide Open Tour. Because my perception is that this is a tour that I think is making money. They have a lot of sponsors. The prize money is far less. Talking $50,000 an event. Next thing, one event's $75,000. We'll look that up before we get to them. But I think that tour is making money. That's my impression of that tour. And I think Karch and Steve Lindecki and Billy Berger got into that wanting to make a business of it, not just for the love of the game.
Of course, you can't just put money into it just because you love it, because you're going to lose it. That's what the AVP did for all those years.
Not everyone is Philip Anschutz.
True.
My favorite example. Who said, I am prepared to lose $20+ million a year ad nauseum forever that I am on this earth in order to make soccer popular. And you know what? It worked, but it took like $160 million. For a billionaire, no big deal.
For me and you, huge deal.
Well,
I know the castle that we're in right now, the pad is unbelievable. I mean, I've moved to the big boy table in today's show. It's unbelievable.
The sun is finally out. No, $160 million. This is a stratospheric number that we're talking about. And that's just a guess. I mean, that's only, at that point, 8 years.
Yeah.
It was about that, in my memory, for soccer to really get to a point where you would see it on SportsCenter all the time, and the stadiums are pretty full, and it appears to be a well-functioning league. They still don't pay terrific money in the world of soccer. they've gotten some stars. They get Beckham to come, and they get some of these other guys, Thierry Henry to come. But they're at that point now where they're starting to access a few of those guys. But they certainly don't have the payrolls that a Barcelona has or a Lazio or some of these other big teams.
Those guys aren't rolling around like NFL, NBA players. That's for sure. Beckham, yes. The third string striker, no.
No.
He's got a job at Home Depot in the offseason.
I think he's doing okay. He's making a living. He's not working at Home Depot. He's not a volleyball player, but he's doing okay. 60, 70.
All right.
You're fine.
Okay.
Yeah, you get lots of freebies. Maybe you're staying with a family. I don't know. I like that idea. I like staying with a family. When I go someplace, we go for my camps. We would stay with people. It is a lot more fun. Forget the cost part of it. I see the benefit from a standpoint of a business, and you pitch it as this is better than a hotel, and that's kind of a personal choice. I understand it takes, I think it is fun for me personally. I enjoy being at people's homes and talking with them. Now, if you get some crazy person, maybe it's not.
Could you see LeBron James going to Chicago and staying at a host family?
Staying with my in-laws or something?
Exactly. So, LeBron, how was that game last night? They're giving him food poisoning and stuff like that so he doesn't beat the Bulls.
He's like, what are we having for dinner? Well, we got some burgers and leftover macaroni salad from last night.
We're having filet. I don't know what you're having, LeBron.
Good stuff. Good stuff. So there's a lot more to come with the AVP. Check it out. Get to AVP.com. Give it a look. Give it a read. And let us know. Email us, thenetlive@gmail.com. Give us a call today, 347-677-1525. Tell us what you think about this. There's a lot of information to digest. I know we've been kind of all over the place with it because it just came out. All right, I was out partying last night. I got up this morning at like 6:30. I couldn't see for a half hour. And then I could finally look at my computer screen and check it out. We're going to keep getting information about this tour, about how they're going to cooperate, and if the NVL is going to sue them, apparently, at this point. Talking to the lawyers, but we're going to have Steve Lindecki on to talk about it coming up next. Corona Wide Open owner. I don't think there's anything wrong with people cooperating, but we've raised some serious questions here.
Of course. Some that may not be answered quickly either, by the way.
No, they're not. We're not going to answer them in this 2 hours. The Net Live here on the VolleyballNetwork.com. Kevin, DJ Roche sitting in. Chris Geeter-McGee is going to call back and Reed Pretty. He's back in practice.
Practice!
We'll be right back.
Volleyball Mag, the industry's number one volleyball magazine. Volleyball Magazine has been serving the volleyball community for over 20 years with the latest in volleyball news and information, product reviews, athlete profiles, fitness, health, and travel-related features. It's published 9 times a year. Volleyball Magazine brings you the inside to the access to sport's biggest stars. Whether you're interested in junior, collegiate, or professional level, sand or indoor, Volleyball Magazine has you covered both on and off the court. Visit us now. Do it. www.volleyballmag.com and subscribe for 1 year for only $19.99. Do that now and receive a new water bottle, a $49 value, free compliments of our friends at Naturally Energized Water Bottles Company. Volleyball Mag, the industry's number one volleyball magazine.
Welcome back in the Net Live here on the volleyballnetwork.com. DJ Roche spinning some tunes for us. DJ and I, Kevin Barnett, sitting in the studio. We're getting our own studio soon. This is just the loft at my house. We're getting our own studio very quickly here in the next couple of weeks. Looking at live streaming, so we will be able to see everything that's happening in the studio. I'm not sure that's a good thing.
I can't wait to come up with a nickname for the studio.
See the panic on my face? I can't wait to come up with a sponsor for the studio. Forget the nickname. Let's get a sponsor for the Volley Dome.
What's the over-under on if Geeter ever wears Uggs when we are live streaming?
I have a couple pair. We'll make him put them on.
Okay.
And if he doesn't put them on, we're going to Photoshop them on him.
Awesome.
We'll get some video effects, too. So live streaming, it looks like he has them on.
Green screen in the background.
That's all it takes. He won't even notice. He'll walk in, it'll be a full green screen. He'll barely even notice. Two into his latte. Been an interesting show so far. We talked about the AVP and its reemergence into the marketplace. Talked about Alice Gates retiring from UCLA. Going to be retiring after 50 years. 5-0, a number that I don't think will ever be seen in men's volleyball, and so rarely is seen in any sport period, but certainly never again in our sport of volleyball. 50 years. Unbelievable. The derby that's going to set off too for getting that job, the UCLA job, open for the very first time. Much the way the women's job was open for the very first time last year.
Oh, yeah.
So we still have to come Steve Lendecky, the Elevation Group, formerly Karch's agent and owner of the Corona Wide Open. Also have Olympic gold medalist Tom Hoff, played for the national team for 12 years, was the captain of that team in Beijing in 2008, and then played overseas again, forced to retire due to injury, spent a little time as a coach last year. We're going to talk to him a little bit about his career, talk to him about rooming with me, and we're going to talk to him about the gold medal, the post-gold medal period, his transition into coaching and coaching the team, and now you're coaching the players that you played with, which I think is interesting. And then on to being a working stiff, getting back into the real world, getting completely out of volleyball. So I think a very interesting discussion with Tom about how to make those changes. Because being a professional athlete, you know your career has a horizon. That's it. Once you go through it, done. Once the sun sets, it's over. You then have to start over. And not everyone could just hang out in their loft still talking about their career and what they once were.
Subtle.
Yeah. But people have to move on and do other things. And Scott Fortune is a financial advisor, and his talents actually come back to the sport through the USA Volleyball Foundation. You look at Bob Stavertlik. He's involved with the IOC. So he has some stuff there. I think he used to be in another industry. I think it may have been financial as well. But you see people kind of on the periphery. You know, some sell mobile phones.
Is that why Reed and you guys started this show, so he has something to do when he's done playing?
Yeah. We're hoping this is big enough to fill the $600,000 he makes overseas or whatever the number is.
Speaking of Reed.
Where's Pretty? You promised me he'd be on the show today.
I'm sorry, Kent Steffes. Kent Steffes, I'm sorry. He's not here. He's not here yet.
I can't wait for that conversation.
Reed Pretty's in practice.
Practice?
He's avoiding Ken Steffes. He knows Steffes has it in for him. And I want to know what Pretty put in the emails to Steffes that has Steffes so riled up that he gave us a call last week just to wonder where Pretty was.
Do you feel like Kent was stalking the show a little bit, like waiting for Reed to appear, and he's like, okay, I'm here, let's do this?
Was, is. Kent's listening right now.
Of course he is.
I guarantee it.
Love it.
All right, we're working without caller screening today, so a little bit of sketchiness going on here with the screening.
Sketchiness as in you're nervous who you're about to pull up?
That's right. I'm always a little bit worried.
Could be the person that's supposed to be on, or it could be some random caller.
It could be.
Sweet.
It could be. I'm going to go with it here.
That's what makes the show fun.
I'm going to go with it here. We're going to hope that in the queue here we have Steve Lendecky. This gentleman was Karch's agent. Began the Corona Wide Open Tour. He worked with IMG from 1985 until 2002. He went and started the Elevation Group and is a managing partner and has been since 2003. He looks like Bradley Cooper. He could have just starred in Limitless. We're hoping he's joining us here on the Net Live. Steve Lendecky, are you there?
What I find absolutely amazing is I go from assistant coach at Penn State to BMW and outdoor agent.
See, this is what I was worried about.
That was one of the best openings I have ever heard from you. Thanks, Barney. I'm going to record that. I haven't got background music and everything.
Right now, he's going, what are these hacks doing?
Like, I would never.
I'm sorry to steal the thunder. I'm just going through withdrawals, and the men's season is over, and I'm losing my mind. I mowed the lawn. I painted the kitchen. I'm doing housework, and I need the season to start next year. So I felt like I should call in at my normal time and say hi, see how you guys are doing, and get involved any way that I can. I need something, guys. You got to throw me a bone here. I'm losing my mind.
For those that have not been listening to the show or new to the show, this is Jay Hossick, who joins us each week for the College Volleyball Weekly, the CVW, not to be confused with the CWO, the Corona Wide Open, of which he does not own any part of.
No. Not on my side.
You just gave him the greatest intro ever.
I know.
That was awesome. I can't believe how lucky I was for that. I'm sitting here when you were doing it, I'm laughing because I'm going, I'm going to give Lindecki a second to hopefully that he was the other caller that you were talking to, and unfortunately it was just not the case.
Jay,
yeah.
You know, sometimes things are going really well on the show, and sometimes they aren't.
Well, I'm the common denominator in both those sides.
Jay, I want to know if you could. You gave us the intel on who was voting Ohio State number one before.
But you know what? I do know who voted in those spots. I'm not going to do that publicly. That's not my position. Let's just say that they are very well respected people in the game. They're not newcomers, and it's a little disturbing, but I think you hit the nail right on the head that the poll is useless. It doesn't mean anything. It's nothing more than a chess beating contest, and it's unfortunate, but at the same time, what are you going to do? You're going to call them up at their office and be like, hey, what's the deal? And you just let them do what they're going to do. You know, the people know who the real winner was and who the other teams are. It's okay.
All right. You tell them privately, since you won't name them publicly. You tell them privately.
Yes. I will tell them.
I defend this position. They should call us. It's not defendable. It's like half the people I say on this show, it's not really defendable.
I can guarantee you right now that neither one of those guys will ever call you personally or call you for the team to discuss that. Just throwing that out there.
Just making enemies every day. Jay, thanks for calling.
Thanks, guys. Have a good one. See
all right. Later on.
That was awesome.
Jay Hossick. Yeah, I think we have Steve now.
I'm going to do the same intro music again. We're just going to do it again.
We're just going to hit it again. We're going to hit the next phone number. So if you want to just call the show and get introduced as Steve Lindecki, call now.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Call the program. Oh, my goodness. Can we get Reed back in your screen and some calls?
He's at practice.
Practice. All right, let's try this again. He's Karch's agent, involved integrally with volleyball for many, many years. Worked at IMG from 1985 until 2002, and then became managing partner at the Elevation Group. Part owner of the Corona Wide Open Tour. He looks like Bradley Cooper. From his picture, he's a youthful-looking man. Please welcome into the show, joining us for the first time on the Net Live, Steve Lindecki. Steve.
Hey, guys. How are you?
Good. Thanks for calling.
Do you rehearse those intros, or are you just kind of pull them, you know, right out of wherever?
I got to tell you, I pulled it out of wherever the first time, but it was Jay Hossick on the line and not you. So normally we have...
I'm sorry. I missed my cue. I feel like I was only in about a minute late, so I apologize for that.
No, absolutely. It was not you. It was the function here and Jay Hossick feeling badly that he had never been properly introduced on the program. So,
okay.
Right. Not you at all. Well, Steve, thanks for joining us. Thanks for calling. We've talked a lot about your tour, the Corona Wide Open, throughout this period when the AVP disappeared. And the AVP now, having made this announcement, I don't know how much time you've had to kind of go through their website. I had about 45 minutes to kind of read and digest what they had there. What are your thoughts on the reemergence of the AVP?
I was running around. I had several phone calls. What exactly are you referring to? I feel like if I think for a second, you're talking about a something that must have followed the announcement that was sitting at AVP.com with respect to an announcement on the 15th, and there's been an announcement, and I didn't realize that. Is that what you're telling me? Should I be going to the website and checking it out?
Oh, most certainly. Yeah, they have changed their website, and they put up a variety of different information about how they want to support the game. They put out a pretty cool video featuring John Hyden talking about the collapse last year of the AVP and the sport itself. And then there's a bunch of events, and they're running now a point series that is related to your tour. They're actually counting points for finishes on your tour and on the NVL, on Albert Hanneman's National Volleyball League. And they have some links to several of your events with the Corona Wide Open and several references to Corona Wide Open and the things that you guys have been doing with that tour. And they have a standalone event at the end of the year in October that will take into account points from your tour, points from the National Volleyball League, and points from the FIVB, and invite four teams of each gender to participate in this single one-off event, winner-take-all prize money in Huntington Beach. I
listen to Meet the Press every Sunday, and I feel like the politician who's being asked a really, really good question but is uninformed in order to give a smart, comprehensive, and rich in content response. I'll say this, I'll try and review while we're talking, but I think for the sport, the AVP going out of business last year was a very, very sad day. And they've been an important part of the sport for a long time. As you may know, I sat on the AVP board in 2008, which was the year in which Mr. Lewin got involved. And I worked with Jason Hodel and the rest of the guys to help that happen, because the AVP was in dire financial situation at that time as well. And it's hard for me to comment. I was listening to you, and I'm trying to click through to see what's here. I know that just off the cuff, hearing that there may be, it's hard for me to follow what the connection is between the AVP and the Corona Light Wide Open here and now.
If you click on their events and you click down on some of the different events that are listed there, your events are...
I see.
Yeah, I guess my question is more to this, and this is answerable without having to read their entire site. There's quite a bit of information up there and kind of, they're trying to get rid of the past and talk about the future and talk about cooperating and the push forward of the sport. But my question is, with you guys trying to build a brand, and presumably, in our estimation of the show, we've talked a lot about the beach game and where it's at. We feel like your tour has the most established sponsors, the most established history, and appears to be successful from a financial point of view. How do you guys feel about the AVP logo, the AVP moniker reemerging into the marketplace that presumably you're trying to occupy a portion of?
Well, great question. I got a couple part answer, I guess, to that. As you touched on, our whole mission with Corona Light Wide Open was to occupy a space, with all due respect to the AVP's positioning over the years, what we felt had happened, and the reason and the motivation of the Corona Light Open and the Corona Light Wide Open, with the decision by the handlers to switch brands in the middle, but still the same style and the same mentality. I think that we were challenged in looking at the sport to understand why certain sponsors were included in the sport. There seemed to be almost a loss of brand identity. So for the sport, not for a brand, but for the sport itself, and I won't name those brands because I'm not meaning to disrespect those corporate brands, it just didn't feel as though there was a connection between them. And so what did that say? What did that mean? And this starts to get a little sophisticated, and if I'm not careful, it gets too sophisticated sometimes in my sales presentations, because the sponsors don't really care about all this kind of detailed information. But my point is that lifestyle and a festival-like atmosphere, a program that carried with it what what, since I spend so much time with one of the legends and many of his friends who are legends with Karch and the guys over the years, and having worked with them and having hosted them at Karch Cry Invitationals and so forth, there was a strong deviation between what was and what is today. And again, I'm not meaning to disrespect anybody of today, because time passes and things evolve. Athletes of today's generation don't know exactly what happened before, and it doesn't mean they're doing anything wrong. It just means that things have changed. Well, did they change for the better of the sport? And so what Corona Wide Open is trying to deliver to current and future sponsors is something that has more sponsorship value, not media buying value, not a media buy, but sponsorship value, meaning that there's something intrinsic about the property. There's something organic and endemic about it that they can't get anywhere else. Many sponsors already are involved with other sports, and so they looked to beach volleyball. I'm talking about, say, a period of the early 90s, and they said, my goodness, look at that group. Sure, they might be 18 to 35-year-olds. They might be, because of the beers, they might be 21 to 49-year-olds, and we want that group. We can get them over here, but it's something about what that sport's offering and those particular people that we want to associate with, and we want our brand to be associated with the brand of that sport. That's sponsorship. Once it starts shifting to what are the ratings going to be, what's the television look like, what do we get from our spots, now you're moving away from the sponsorship. And I think that unfortunately is what I felt I was seeing in 2008, looking at the numbers then, and what I think happened again. You get weighed down by the cost of production, you get weighed down by the cost of the time, and you're not recovering it through a proper television rating, so that your sponsors, which really are advertisers at this point, are then recouping what they want from it, and you can't then price it properly. So so back to square one with Corona Light Wide Open, we're trying to reincarnate that situation for the sport. And I apologize if I rambled on a little too long. I hope that made sense, but that's just, as a professional sports marketer, this is how I'm looking at it. This is how our team is looking at it. And in fact, this reminds me of something that probably would be my greatest regret from last summer, because as you know, there was a lot going on last summer. We got good flack, amazing flack, and then we got negative flack at times with respect to our decision regarding the rules. And Karch and I talked about this. Everybody on our team, Bill Berger, you've spoken with, talked about these things and what to do. And at a point in time following August 13th, there was a statement. I can't remember how it exactly came out, but it was that Karch had commented that the AVP model was broken. And that was taken to mean by a lot of the players, as I've learned through subsequent conversations, that Karch's definition of the model was a model that paid too much prize money. Well, I could see why a lot of players, of course, anybody could think Karch is saying that we're not getting paid enough prize money. That wasn't the model that they were referring to. And by looking at a Corona Wide Open, you might have concluded, since we were only paying 5,000 or so, or however much, 5, 10, we were kind of upping it as we could,
right,
that we were putting all the money into the event and we were not paying out the sponsorship money to in the form of prize money. We were instead deciding to invest it in the event. And that wasn't really the case at all. It's in fact the opposite. The model that Karch would refer to is that the events broadcast something and that you have star players that become your spokespeople. And the model is instead that the athletes shouldn't be 90%+ dependent upon their livelihood shouldn't be dependent upon prize money, that instead it should be a much, much smaller percentage of their gross annual income that comes from prize money. And instead, if the tour's properly positioned, if the brand of the sport is correct, then there'll be much, much more money flowing through either the tour organizers or independently being secured by the player representatives in the way of endorsement money. And I don't see any endorsement money. out there. Hardly any at all. Certainly not trickling down to, say, a 10th ranked team. It's stuck right there at number one and not going anywhere further except here and there with dribs and drabs. Whereas back in the day, there was a lot of money flowing down through the ranks, and therefore athletes were getting money from various sources plus prize money.
Let me ask you a question.
Model cartridges, Frank.
What I hear you talking about is that people are not buying media time. You don't want them to buy media time. You want them to buy an association and a brand identity. I think back to Miller Lite in the 90s when beach volleyball was big. That was their identity, was this summer party that was the AVP, and that's how they wanted their brand to be thought of in the marketplace. It wasn't about a specific number. Am I characterizing your thoughts on that accurately, that it's not a media buy about numbers, it's about a feeling and an atmosphere? Okay,
that's generally correct, yes.
And then you're talking about players needing to access that feeling with sponsors. And I wonder if your experience inside of volleyball and in auto racing and tennis and some of the other things you guys do, figure skating I saw on your site, have you seen a shift over the last 10 years, 15 years for advertisers or people buying time? Have they shifted to more of a return on investment model where they need to be able to quantify, what am I getting back for this buy exactly, rather than more of a feeling and a brand identity? Is that money still out there for that type of association in the way that it was 15 years ago?
Well, without question, the section of the discussion between an agency, a marketing entity like ourselves, and the buyer, the yep. brand, has got a lot more time focused on the ROI, the ROO, return on opportunity, another phrase that's used, that we're measuring and measuring and measuring more and more often. But we're measuring a lot of different things. We're not just taking a television rating. We're not just counting eyeballs that see a banner. We're having to dig deep, and we've got different radio, television, print, the social networking side of it. So there's a lot of time being spent on the measuring, and I think that has to do with evolution in the sense that since the sports marketing industry is now a much more mature business, that there's, this is more of a SECA discussion way of putting this, that experts that were at the agencies have found themselves to the brand side, and the guys from the brand side have found themselves in agencies and bouncing back and forth here and there. Some very famous people have switched. One of them I'm thinking of is with a soccer team right now internationally, but he was with a brand. He went to an agency, he went back to a brand, and now he's with this team. And these people keep moving the expertise back and forth so that you've got this much higher level of sophistication with respect to understanding what a brand can achieve and gather from its association. Yep. To the second part of that, to your question, would be that the brand affinity is still a key part of it. It's still the crux of it in the first place. I don't think any decisions in the relationship between a brand and the sport property that it chooses to associate itself does not include that kind of analysis. In the case that I was describing with the AVP situation, I was describing the AVP, is that it evolved into that, and the brand got, I don't think I can point my finger at, say, one individual. It just seems as though the sport found its way from the early 90s through a period of time where, if I recall correctly, that there was a tennis association that was trying to be built, not between volleyball and tennis, but the way tennis was being run, that model and style was being applied to volleyball. And then as that things just trickled into the new century, we had this ongoing activity that brought some sponsors in that, where the question maybe should have been asked of the brand was, how are you going to identify your brand with us? How are you going to be offering value to the sport through what you're doing? And instead, the money was being accepted and the relationship was being built, and yet ongoing value was not necessarily being derived on behalf of of the sport and thinking long-term, the sponsor deal might have been a three- or a five-year kind of arrangement, but the sport was meant to go on for another 20, 30, 40 years with AVP as the driving brand. So it didn't, and so here we are with our opportunity.
I guess my other question relating to the finances is, as we talk with Steve Lindecki, owner of the Corona Wide Open Tour, and a person with a long view, I think, of the business of beach volleyball, my question gets to something we discussed earlier about what really is the value of beach volleyball in the marketplace. You talked about your prize money. You touched on the prize money you guys are giving out, which was $5,000 for a win or $10,000 for a win, depending upon the different tournament and what's coming up now. Where is that number really, either on a per-tournament basis or maybe on a season basis, that the value of beach volleyball can be quantified? I mean, you talk back to the early 90s where players were making $500,000 in prize money or $300,000 in prize money, and now that number is all the way down domestically to, I don't know, $20,000 or $30,000 perhaps this year if you're successful on a domestic basis. Where is that number in the marketplace for the sport? What's it worth?
I don't mean to be smart by giving this answer to you, but it is where it is. That's the value of it right now. And so to answer it moving forward, it's what we're doing today that's going to determine what it will be tomorrow. I admire the efforts of the players to try and set a mark, a minimum number, to pursue those kinds of standards. That's what they should do. It's exactly what they should do. They should be pursuing these kinds of minimum standards for their time, and at the same time, lots of other things that are important to them through collective bargaining agreement-like discussions. But this sport is in a tenuous position right now. It's not clear to the advocate, to the sponsors out there, the prospective sponsors, exactly what it is. We have to identify that for them, and that's why our attitude with the Wide Open was, let's have a party and have a volleyball tournament breakout rather than running a volleyball tournament and trying to put a party around it. It was, let's have a party and do this, and sponsors gravitate to that, and look at the sponsors that we're working with, some of the most iconic brands that are more truly naturally fit for this awesome lifestyle sport that it is. And moving forward, we've got Kelly James performing in Siesta Key, a live concert there on Saturday afternoon. We don't see that very often. We haven't seen that kind of thing in a long time, and yet the Corona Light stage presented by Oakley will have that for entertainment on Saturday afternoon, and we'll have other announcements with respect to our live bands moving forward. Our fashion shows that we do on Saturday afternoons, the player party, which has hundreds of people at it every single time. I mean, we've worked really, really hard on these components of the program so that all the players, and I think we get pretty good endorsements from them, say, well, when we're a Wide Open, we're having a good time. We're playing good volleyball. We're having a great time playing the volleyball, and we're having a great time beyond that. And your fellow host is joining us. Luke Van Valen has established himself. We're moving Peter Bigler and his nuttiness over to ions.com, where we'll be presenting our the internet side of this through a lot of different activities. It's just about a lot of fun, and volleyball is still central to it all, but I think we've got to work hard in order to build this and rebuild it. And then to answer your question, because I didn't want to be scooting by it, then if we build that value, this 20 to 30 grand that you suggested, which might be all that certain players achieve in 2011, is 60 grand. And then, gosh, if we can help them find some product endorsements, it's 90 grand. And before you know it, one can make six figures, and you don't have to necessarily be a one or two ranked athlete to do it. You might be 10th or 11th or 12th, and at least you're aspiring to earn some respectable income and pay your bills and not have to do something else Monday through Wednesday and find training time in the afternoon in order to go out and play on the weekend.
Yeah, it seems like the sport is in a tenuous position from a standpoint of maintaining athletes due to that factor you're talking about, where you have to be probably top four, top five in the world or in the United States to be able to continue to play volleyball professionally. I think you guys have done a great job establishing that party atmosphere with a volleyball tournament happening around that. That's often been the reports that we get and certainly the feeling we get when we're at your events. Given that, you took a little bit of criticism on the rules that you guys chose to play with, big court, no antennas, the old school ball, that kind of thing. We understand you've made some rule changes. Why then make those changes now?
Because the answer to that question is in the early part of your question. It's in a tenuous spot. I don't want to really get into that too much because I don't think it goes in the right direction. We've got a lot of good activity that we're working on. I'll just say that that's not a fight or a battle worth taking on at this point in time. There's too many other things much, much, much higher on the priority list. And so in my mind, in Karch's mind, in Billy's mind, in our sponsor's mind, let's put that aside. Let's put that aside for right now.
Can you answer where the push was coming from for that? Was that the players' push that mm-hmm. made you consider that change?
I think it was just a general sentiment. I mean, there's players, there's an NGB, I won't tell you that it came from the audience. That clearly was, in fact, from our numbers, I promise you I'm not making something up to make a case, from our numbers that we were getting, at least 60% of the people that we came in contact enjoyed what we were doing. But I appreciate why you're asking that question, and I get it, and I know why it would be of interest and so forth, but I don't want to talk about that anymore. It's just it is what it is, and we're super excited with what we're doing this year, and we're going to have a phenomenal time regardless of what – I mean, absolutely phenomenal time at Corona Wide Opens regardless of what the rules are.
Yeah, you guys do put on a good party, but there's only five parties this year. It's a little bit down from the year before. We were just wondering why that happened in light of the fact there was some open space with the AVP having gone away.
Well, that's business economics. We're working. We could feel what was going on in the marketplace, and we definitely have an opportunity. Corona Light Wide Open tournament formats are staying the same. We will be hosting and offering a phenomenal prize package to a lot of amateur players. There'll be at least 200 teams at almost all of our events, and there'll be plenty of open pro players as well. And so I think in order to maintain our positioning properly in the marketplace, and do what was best for us and for our sponsors, that this was the right thing to do. And so, you know, if you do just some simple math and recognize that we collected some more sponsor dollars, we pushed our sponsor prize purse as high as we could get it, and so five events is what it is, and building up towards the U.S. Open, and they'll still remain true to the identity of the Wide Open and everything that's great about it.
Steve, we really appreciate you spending all this time with us. I have one more question before you go, and that mm-hmm. just relates to the business of beach volleyball. We've talked to people from the AVP that have said it never really was in the black in any given year in its entire existence. We have people who have operated on investor dollars even now in trying to start new tours. My perception is that the Corona Wide Open was started as a business and functions as a business, and that you guys very much are involved with making it a profitable business. And I just wonder if you guys are the one entity in the arena operating in the black.
I'm sure of it.
All right.
I'm positive. We are. We are running it as a business, and several of the things that I have said earlier as it relates to a perspective and a strategy moving forward will mean that it stays that way. It's critical. If I've ever been motivated to move my family from where I live in the Midwest to LA, the main motivation for that has been that I'm positive then I would have more time to spend with people just because, you know, I'd be closer to them. Instead of talking here on the phone like this, hopefully there's plenty of good people listening. You and I would sit down and talk about it. It's as much of a high as we are on with respect to this tour. We're still working on a very, very difficult project. And the difficult project is that there isn't enough commercial activity surrounding the sport. There's not what one would call an industry. You can't point to ball sales and net systems and say there's the beach volleyball industry. You can't put those three words together. There's just right. Not compare it to any other sport, and it's just not happening. But it was. It was happening. It absolutely was happening. So we've got to get it back to where it was. We have to, moving forward, we have to remember how it got to where it was, and that includes a brand identity and so forth, and some of these things that we touched on earlier that I don't think I should repeat again. But it has to include that. Otherwise, it's a waste of time. And so as a professional sports marketer, I wouldn't still be involved if I didn't think we were making headway. We are making headway. We're getting there. And so I think the future is very, very bright. And we extend olive branches and send out messages for the sake of building bridges to virtually every single person in the sport. I hope that if nothing else, that my organization is seen as one that's very, very cooperative and tries to foster opportunities to work together and to share, not to hoard it all for ourselves. Even the message to sponsors is, we want your competitors involved. Your competitors need to be involved, because if you guys keep fighting for it, we're going to have a rising tide that raises all the boats together, and the value of the property keeps growing. That's a value that to the athletes that had not been provided in any previous agreement that I reviewed on Karch's behalf. In fact, it was exactly the opposite, in such a way that it was possible to do business.
Well, we've definitely seen the beer wars drive volleyball. You see energy drink wars driving several sports now in the actual arena. And I think the issue you raised is something we've talked about on this program, and I'd love to have you back another time to talk about at length, and that is the business of what volleyball sells. We're a little short on time here for today,
sure.
And I would love if you'd come back again and talk about that issue, about what it used to be, what it is now, and what beach volleyball really can sell, and how it can be built back into a really good business. But
I'd be happy to. In a couple of weeks, we'll have we'll have finalized some things related to the format and the plans for the U.S. Open of beach volleyball, and I can maybe then use that time to tell you about that, and then we can talk about what you just mentioned.
That would be awesome. Steve, thank you so much for today. We look forward to our future conversations and the Corona Wide Opens that are happening this year.
You bet. Have a great day.
Thanks. You. Steve Lindecki, the Elevation Group, managing partner there, and a guy who's in the black with volleyball. Can't say that too often about beach volleyball or even indoor professionally. It's just not there. The only other people in the black are club operators in the junior level.
A lot of people can't say that, period.
Yeah. Hey, I think that was a long conversation, and there's a lot of information in there, a lot of stuff that's kind of inside baseball. But that's why you're here, and that's one of those ones I'd go back and listen to again. If you're thinking about the sport in a business perspective and thinking about where beach volleyball is really headed, I think a lot of what Steve said there is important information from a man who's been in touch with it for a long time. You're talking 85 to the present. That's a while. He's seen the ups, the downs, and the sideways. I think we're going sideways right now. Is this show going sideways?
No, it's going great.
Okay, just checking.
You're doing a great job.
Hey, Tom Hoff coming up next. Olympic gold medalist, indoor player, and working stiff. We're going to talk to him about real life after volleyball. He's not hanging on. I'm still here, scratching, clawing. Kevin and DJ Roche in the Net Live. We'll be right back. Welcome back in the Net Live on the VolleyballNetwork.com. Just recovering from 25 minutes of solid information with Steve Lindecki. That was an intense 25 minutes of business talk. DJ, sometimes we get in there and we get silliness in some of these interviews. We get some of the fun side of people in the sport. But Steve, boy, he had some great information. We just had to stick with it.
Yeah, you can't jump in and just start making fun of a guy like that because he was giving good information and you didn't want to break up his momentum.
Yeah, like how was De Niro in Limitless?
Yeah.
Was he easy to work with?
And was it fun to be in Thailand and The Hangover 2?
That's right. Hangover 2, that's coming. Is that out already?
Nope. I think it's out 30th next maybe? Week or something like that. Okay. I'm not watching any previews. I just want to go to the theater and see it.
I've got two movies on my list. I'm with you on that. I have some movies like that. I don't care what you think. I don't care what the reviews say.
I'm going.
I saw the preview. They already own my $10. I just want to see the movie.
They had my $10 after the first one.
Right.
Yeah, and I don't want to see a preview. I don't want to know what happens. I'm just going to go and laugh hysterically.
You will see it because the first one was so good.
Yes.
I've got two movies on my list right now. I've got Thor.
Heard it was good.
Okay. And I've got Priest.
I've only read the reviews that they didn't like it, but I don't know the premises of the movie. It's one of those that I will wait till it comes out on DVD to see. I don't need to go to the theater.
It's a vampire flick type thing. Looks like stylistic gothic stuff, and it's from a director who did, I can't remember the name of the movie, but it was something about angels on Earth coming to destroy Earth and the old lady climbing on the ceiling and shooting her and guys with long limbs and that kind of stuff.
Saw that movie. Can't remember the name of it.
I heard it was horrifyingly bad.
I don't expect a lot from movies these days because people make a lot of bad movies.
Right.
So I just want to be entertained. Just entertain me and I'm fine.
I feel that way about a lot of films. It's about setting expectations. If I go in, I see some cool monsters, some good shooting.
Then you're fine.
Like Terminator, was it Reinvention or
86, 34?
Yeah, the last one. Yeah. The last one. I went into it just going, if I see some cool Terminators and some stuff getting blown up, I had a good time.
Look, I wasn't going to admit this on air, but I saw Fast Five last night in the theater.
That's directed by a 5-year-old, if you listen to the Onion Network.
I went with some friends. We just, my lady's out of town. I got nothing else to do, so we went and saw it. It's, it was what it was.
Vin Diesel charity program.
I was entertained.
Okay.
I can't believe I just admitted that on the air, and that's recorded for life now. But, you know, I was entertained. There were some cool scenes in it. That's all that mattered. There was some cheesy dialogue.
Mm-hmm. That's what the scene is known for, yeah.
Yes. The movie is not a comedy, but I found myself laughing a lot.
Every time somebody says I was entertained, I always think of Gladiator. Are you not entertained? Is this not what you came here to see? I'm hoping for some good films. And I'm hoping you're getting what you want out there and being entertained by this show. Tell your friends. We're getting some listenership out there. TheNetLive@gmail.com is our address. You can friend us on Facebook, facebook.com/TheNetLive. You can call us during the show, 347-677-1525. A lot of different ways to get involved with this program.
I can't see the chat board right now, but are people saying, why is the DJ talking so much and where's Dieter?
Said Fast Five is hilarious. Got that up there.
Nice. Well, at least they're listening to me.
Yeah, and Barnett showing his inner geek by listing two comic book movies on his must-see list. And if you missed earlier, I referred to StarCraft. So, yes, the inner geek on display. I told my wife, I said, it was a good thing I was good at sports because pretty much a nerd otherwise.
Because no girl would ever speak to you ever.
No, that was pretty much high school.
Gotcha.
So I started playing sports, then I had something.
Where's Pretty? You promised me he'd be on the show today.
I'm sorry, Kent. I'm sorry. He's going to be here soon for you to lambaste. And I want some quotes from your email. I want to know what Pretty has said to you. Like, I'm better. I would kill you on the beach.
I would dominate you. Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you see Reed recently?
I did. I saw him down at practice.
Has he gotten a little color? I know the weather hasn't been that great in California.
He's white like paper.
Love it.
But so am I. Hey, we had a good email come in about my comment regarding liberos a few weeks ago. And I said I thought we were seeing the evolution of a position and people adopting a libero position as a way to contribute to the team. And that these guys had really taken on that position in talking about a couple of the liberos who were in the Final Four. And I got a note saying, oh, the liberos are a converted setter and an outside hitter. They didn't play libero until they got to college or the last couple of years. But okay, that's valid. But I want to clarify what I said. Because I played during the time period when it was transitional, the libero position, brand new. No one had ever played it. It didn't exist. And so I think on the national team in particular, and as it came into college, you saw players that identified themselves as outside hitters, as setters, mostly outside hitters because they had the passing experience, who then were forced to play libero. It was pretty much get cut or play libero because you're not making it an outside hitter. In particular, on the national team, that's what it was. It was for Eric Sullivan, it was, all right, you need to play libero for us. Eric's a good hitter, had some tools, but at the international level, there were guys that had better tools for the hitting part but didn't have the same passing skills that he had. And he played that and eventually adopted it, played it very well. And I think Rich Lamborn came along later and he's adopted that position even though he had been an outside hitter. But I think where the evolution comes in is even though these guys became converted players, they had the history with the libero position, knowing its value. If you're a setter, if you're an outside hitter, you know the value of that position. And so I think it's viewed as a real position on the floor versus a bailout spot of you're not good enough here, we're going to stick you in this spot because that's all we have. I think these guys, they know the value of that position at libero and say, yes, this is, I can contribute here. It's not so much a negative. It's more of a positive because they realize that that is something that drastically affects the game. The play of a libero is something that can so influence a match.
Well, and they're the defensive specialists, correct?
They are.
Yeah. Now, that's also saying like you as an outside hitter, correct? Could you play libero?
Absolutely not.
Gotcha.
Not known for my passing. Not known for my passing. I passed well enough to stay on the court and hit. And many times that meant I passed so poorly that you could only set me to hit. People accuse me of doing that on purpose.
Coincidence?
You be the judge.
Just saying.
But I think that that's what the difference really is. And that's why I think you see people excel in that position and affect the game so dramatically from that position because it is a position of contribution, not a fallback spot. So I wanted to get that out there.
Just to clarify, because you're catching some heat.
Yeah, I don't like people send me angry emails. That's no good. Got our next guest in the queue, DJ. Better spin up some music for this man. Because if there's something to do in indoor volleyball, this man has done it. Spent 12 seasons on the national team, coming on in 1997, finished up in 2008 with a gold medal in Beijing, China, where he was the captain of that team, shepherding it through an incredible tournament, an amazing year, a historic year for that team. He was my roommate for much of my career. He's been to three Olympic Games, and now he just pushes paper in an office. But he's kind enough to join us here. Gold medalist Tom Hoff, welcome to the Net Live.
Thank you very much. I don't push much paper. How about that? I talk on the phone and do a lot of email. Yeah, give us time, Kevin.
Okay. All right. Sorry.
Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it. It's very good to be a part of it. So thank you very much.
Hey, Tom, we know that you recently transitioned into real life, but I wanted to kind of take you back to your time on the national team as a professional athlete. And talk about your journey from joining the national team in 1997, you're a good college player, coming in kind of at the end of that season and playing a little bit, all the way to 2008, you saw so many different coaches, so many different players. Just reflect on some of the good, the bad, the ups and downs that you saw through your career.
Yeah, that's a pretty – I don't know if we have enough time here to discuss all the issues, but I'll summarize it by this. The game has been completely rewarding, opened up so many great opportunities for myself, my teammates, the people who have been involved throughout the years on the many teams I've played on. The thing I like to really focus on is giving back to the sport right now. And that involves, for me, unfortunately, I can't do it on the court, and I don't get, let's say, satiated in the volleyball world by playing anymore because I can't do it anymore on the court. What I really love to do is introduce and help younger kids get involved to the sport at the level and the kind of the quality of coaching that I think that they should be privy to that I would have loved to have when I was younger. So that's really the basis of, for me, let's say the 20-year journey from initiating playing the game the first time when I was 15 to winning a gold medal in Beijing. I now return all that time and all these great experiences, and I want to flood back with the kids and the youth of the game to allow them to say, you know what, if you're passionate about whether it's volleyball or whatever in your life, great things can happen to you by having that drive, making those sacrifices, and really having some driving force in your life. And for me, that was volleyball.
Tom, how are you still active in that role? In touching youth in the sport or giving back to the sport, what are you able to do? I know you have a family. You have, I don't know, 16 girls at home, so you're a busy man. But
we're actually I do have five daughters, so obviously I have a team in the making right there. We actually have a birthday at the house today, but I actually, any type of opportunity I can to, let's say, speak to schools, organizations, groups that would like to hear a little bit of the team that I was a part of in 2008, obviously, that journey and, again, that ability to share the so many positive experiences that came out of persevering through a lot of, let's say, non-gold medal resulted tournaments and games, and to say that working hard, being focused and working with your teammates, persevering through some times that were not always gold medal experiences has allowed me this this great empowerment as a person and also as a team. We got to be enriched by it, and just to let the kids know that those things in your life, whether it's volleyball, and for me it was volleyball, but to have that passion, perseverance, and working hard, good things will happen to them. You know, and it just teaches them a great some life lessons, you know, of how to approach their life. So, and that's, for me, it's all a lot of local volleyball clinics, speaking engagements with schools and organizations, with teams. I really appreciate being able to go in and talk a little bit about the experiences that I had with myself and my teammates.
Tom, I remember you and I chatted after the 2008 games at a post-party back here in the United States, and the goal for so long for you and I, ingrained by the organizations, by society in general, by the team, was to win a gold medal. and here you guys had done it and accomplished it. And I remember you and I sitting there, and you kind of said, we've done it, so what now? It didn't really feel like anything had changed. You played a tournament, you took home the gold medal, it was all great and everything, but it just seemed like things kind of rolled forward. Have you gained any more perspective on the change that that really precipitated in your life a few years later now?
I would say let's go back to we win a gold medal, and I think it was obviously an awesome accomplishment, but we were – one of the reasons we were successful was we were able to separate ourselves from the result, the goal that was ahead of us, with just playing and being lost in the moment. So I thought our guys in 2008 were extremely, extremely good at removing that end goal and just saying, you know what, it's about this next point. It's about executing the things we talked about, how we want to take advantage of this other team, how we want to play our side of the net. And it was really focusing to try to be in the moment as you're trying to perform these crazy, ridiculous, difficult volleyball activities without thinking what's at stake. And obviously for a gold medal, I know I talk to our guys a lot about this is something that you'll remember, will remember literally. I always say going into the grave, you know, and it's not about if I got five more kills, you'll never remember it. The important things are to accomplish something truly special, truly great. And, you know, we are able to all give up a little bit of part to create this really special moment for our team. And obviously for USA Volleyball, our country, it was a great, enriching moment.
And you talk about never forgetting the team and the experience and the men you fought with. Through so many years, you've been through so many different players. I think Phil Etherton and I in 2004 counted it up, the number of players we'd seen come and go since 1997. It was something like 67 players just on the national team. And of course, you went through at least 20 or 30 more in the next 4 years. As you think about those people, think about some of the special moments. Are there people that stick out in your mind in good ways, funny, craziest, most fun? Is there something that sticks out in your mind?
Yeah, you know, I'd have to check on your audience before I start divulging some good stories on the road. I know we could share a couple, maybe at a later date. But, you know, really one of the just interesting points is we qualify as a team, as a country first for the USA, and obviously the national team has the job to do that first, get some Olympic bid rights that would qualify us as a country. And then several months down the road, the team is actually selected. So it's a process that's, I don't know how well it's communicated throughout the volleyball world, is you can qualify with the USA team at a tournament and win the rights to be in the Olympic Games, but you don't earn that right as a player till sometimes several months down the road. And we've had players who have been on the court to celebrate but weren't able to be at the Olympic Games because they weren't chosen.
Right.
Whether that's because of some team dynamics issue, injury, just a change in what we needed of those 12 people. That's a pretty brutal outcome when you think of it. You got to celebrate it with the team, and then you weren't able to go to the big dance, what you planned on doing. So that's really the biggest thing. And there are some guys out there who had the unfortunate circumstance to go through that. And it's pretty tough on guys. I know all the guys I played with, like you're saying, 67, I don't know, maybe it's 167, all had aspirations to go to the Olympics to represent our great country and hopefully earn the right to become a gold medalist. So we all had that aspiration, but unfortunately it was only 12 could do it.
I think the parameters we put on it was you had to have appeared in a national team practice more than twice or something like that. You couldn't have just shown up. Hung out the gym to be counted on that list.
Yeah, you know, to truly excel in whatever profession you're, whether that's athletics, business, if you have the wherewithal to compete and be successful at the highest level, and I'm building a team, you know, obviously you're the one, whether that was Doug or Hugh, rolling the dice on personnel. When you've done it several times before and you weren't afraid of that stage, let's say, to truly take the opportunity and go for the win, that's a pretty that's pretty strong in their minds, I think, of let's say the selection committee, which is pretty small at USA Volleyball, but it's have that experience under your belt, and obviously that's a nice thing to take to the bargaining table when you're going in.
Hey, Tom, I know that you, when you spend time on the national team, you have to kill time in between practices. You have to kill time in between tournaments. And you spent a lot of time with a game called StarCraft, and I just wonder how many hours of your life have been sucked away into the StarCraft black hole.
Yeah, you know, we've gone through a couple phases on our national team. There's always kind of the hot time waster, let's say. And it, you know, the thing I like to say, if it's video games or we were playing poker or we were playing cards, Kevin and I have had some great flights, 10-hour flights of cribbage. We were arguing and fighting. Obviously, those were some good times. I don't think the people on the plane next to us really appreciated the competitiveness of us at like 4 in the morning yelling for points. It's a great thing that keeps you kind of relaxed, keeps you off your legs, and that's really what you want to do when you're a professional athlete. You're really trying to focus your energy on, when I get to the court, I've got 2 hours of the day or 3 hours, whatever that training period is for the day, that you have to really, it's your whole day of work. And if you're working 8 hours, you want to cram that into 3 hours. So it has to be absolutely not a minute, not a rep is wasted in the gym. And that kind of mental tenacity that you carry on in the gym has to be released. And usually we did it through some video games, and it's all good fun. It also is great for team camaraderie. I know I won a big FIFA soccer tournament that I still hold very highly back in the one of our team trips. So
Canada 2002, I think that was.
Batistuta or whatever. He was my closer.
We had 45 noise complaints because we had the entire team, managers and trainers, packed into one room watching two guys play PlayStation soccer.
Was there money on the line?
I don't think the coaching staff was happy.
No, and I recall the cribbage matches we used to have. I remember we were in Argentina having a heated cribbage match in our room, yelling at each other about the rules and about who had scored this or that. And it's like, all right, it's time to go to dinner. We walk out, and rooming right next to us is Doug Beal. We've been screaming at each other with Doug Beal next door, the head coach. It's like, hey, Doug, take it easy.
Tom Beeper say here, it says, according to my notes here, it says you and Kevin were roommates. We like to make fun of each other on the show. Is there anything you can tell me about Kevin?
This show's not long enough.
That would bother you as his part of his roommate repertoire?
Well, I'll share one good story because it involves him. We were, training in Florida somewhere. We were in a practice, and Kevin, I think, got cut and wanted to keep playing in a practice. And I was on the other side, and I told him, hey, look, you got to step off the court. And Kevin, being ultra-competitive as he was saying no, he didn't even want the trainer to interrupt the drill. And I said, I'm not playing. I said, go clean yourself up. He was, you know, obviously he had a hammer on him, and his hand was cut. And I'm like, who wants blood on the ball? And so he was kind of acting tough, and we started barking pretty loud back and forth to each other. I think I was calling him Mike Ditka, you know, right, to tell him to go easy and get taped up. And then, of course, as soon as he left the court to go get taken care of, then I got myself and I got our guys to start making fun of him that, like, I can't believe he's getting his cut taped up. And we were really going at it, and just a lot of rousing going on. But we thought we had the last laugh. And actually, as we were driving home on the bus, we're in Florida. It's about, you know, a cool 130 degrees with 95% humidity. The bus comes to a standstill, and the big instigators, myself and a great player and great competitor, John Hayden, and Kevin, get asked to step off the bus and work out our differences as we walk back home, which was roughly, I don't know what it was, 10 miles or something. And the bus literally just closes the door, and as Kevin's screaming, you know, like, what do we do? We didn't even do anything wrong. You know, I knew we were in for it, so we were on the road to walk and talk and work out some differences. So
I just remember John Hayden, as the bus pulls away, John didn't even feel like he had been involved. The bus is pulling away. He's yelling at the bus, I don't agree with this.
Yeah, as the exhaust is spewing in his face. Yeah, I think I pulled him in a little bit more to it. So, but yeah, John had to hoof it home with us.
Now, I want to get Tom's reaction to this story because this is a story that, I've told maybe before on this show. But there's some difference of opinion as to what exactly occurred. We traveled to Palermo, Italy back in, I think it was 1999. We arrived in Palermo, Italy. Now, normally when you arrive off these trips, it's a 30-hour trip to get somewhere. Everyone's just dog-tired, middle of the day. All right, we're going to practice in a couple hours. Everybody just goes in their rooms and hides, right? We're too tired. We walk into a resort in Palermo, Italy on the cliffs of the Mediterranean, and everybody's out having a great time. So we spend all day out there. We go to practice. We come home from practice. Myself, Eric Sullivan, friend of the show, and Tom decide, let's go take a dip in the Mediterranean before we go up for dinner. It's like 10:30, 11 o'clock at night. We walk out onto the end of this little rock point. It's probably 150 yards from shore. And we're rock, paper, scissors to see who has to go in first. It's odd man out. So we go odd man out. Sullivan loses the bet, slaps Sullivan in the face. He jumps off into the water. Tom jumps next, and I jump right after him. We're all now swimming in the pitch-black Mediterranean at 10:30 at night. We're swimming back towards shore when all of a sudden Sullivan goes, I think something's stinging me. Ah! Ah! You hear Tom start yelling too, and I'm like a motorboat. I mean, I've got my chest. I'm Michael Phelps. I'm out to the belly button putting down a plane to get all the way to the shore. Jellyfish mauled Tom Hoff and Eric Sullivan. We had to go to dinner, and we had to request medical assistance for Mr. Hoff. Tom, can you explain what happened after that point as you returned to your room?
First off, as a competitive guy, I lost the Rosham, and I jumped in immediately after losing the odd man out, I guess it was. And then looking up at you two, laughing on the rock, and I'm going, what did I just jump in the water for? But, yes, and you guys did all get in, but I really took the, let's say, the brunt of it by, I don't know if I was on the edge near the jellyfish. I got stung all over chest, legs, arms, everything, and it looked like I got whipped, lacerated with, you know, like electrical cords, burned all over. My heart rate was flying, and I had to get some, like I said, like Kevin said, some medical assistance. And I definitely was the brunt of many jokes throughout practice. You know, the practice shirt luckily covered most of it up, but diving, sweating, you know, obviously playing in a hot, humid environment really exacerbated what these things felt like on my chest and arms and legs and stuff. And every single guy let me know about it and, you know, kept commenting, how's that feel? So, again, great times. But, yeah, I took a punishing brunt of the jellyfish attack, and hence my dismay ever since for any jellyfish. And I warn all my kids about them that they're extremely dangerous creatures.
And horribly painful.
Yes, exactly.
Tom, I want to get into kind of where you are now, what you're doing for a living now, and how you got there. You had to retire from volleyball. I think it was a shoulder injury that took you down. And you eventually did have to retire. You spent a little time on the bench looking at coaching with the national team. But talk about how you reintegrated yourself back into the working world.
Let's change the story a little bit. We won a gold medal in 2008, and I know we spoke, and we had a lot of hoopla and great celebrations after. I really had a very, difficult time, and after we won, that was the sole goal in my life that drove me to almost everything I ever did, and how I handled my life was geared towards trying to earn the right to be a gold medalist for our country. And that goal was now complete. And as great as that accomplishment is, afterward was extremely taxing and tumultuous for myself professionally as a player and a driving force for me. You know, and even personally, I was I was definitely lost in the ability for me to have some focus for what was really going to push me in the next phase of my life, because I had this 20-year driving force that was now absent. And I did a lot of soul searching and obviously was also trying to provide for my family like I have for my whole career through volleyball, but it wasn't as rewarding and satisfying. It wasn't the same. It wasn't that same experience that I had beaten deep with it was within me, especially when I'd go overseas. Obviously playing in the U.S. has still incredible, great feelings to me. But I would, you know, definitely the overseas portion did not resonate with me anymore. And I ended up trying to kind of explore a similar situation that I found here at a company called Prediction Software. And it is a, let's say, a crystal ball for businesses. And it takes information that gives you an enhanced ability to be successful in the future. And in that sense, that's kind of how, that was one of my, I guess, traits that I really got into, was the statistical or analytical portion of the game. And I kind of started to see the game not only from a feeling standpoint, but also from, I saw players as numbers or values, and I could see certain rotations. They would have the ability to, you know, be successful in this one area, and we would say, let's make them run this play over 3 hours. They have a really, really low probability to beat us, you know, in this situation. And so that part of it really resonated with me. And the other part that was extremely strong was I was – this is a fairly new company with a small amount of people. We're about 20 people right now, with great visions, great dreams to grow up and build this journey together. That's very close to what I did when I was younger as a team. And obviously to have kind of mentors that I had when I was younger also existed here within this company, which were extremely attractive to me, you know, to take on a lot more responsibilities than maybe normally that I would have in a normal job. So many things really interest me. An extremely challenging environment, something that I was not as proficient at as I am as a volleyball player. You know, at the end of my career, when you're played at the highest level for a long time, you get used to, you want to be successful in whatever you do. So that's kind of driving me every single day to attain that level of success here at my job now.
Sounds like you see the matrix when you start talking about players as mathematical models, Tom. That's good vision.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. That's just the way my mind saw things. I saw percentages. I saw hitting percentages. I saw, you know, chances to take, the ability for you to say, we should allow this person to take a risk to try to beat us over time, because that wouldn't happen. You know, and the longer we saw teams, the more times we saw them over time, the more clear that picture got from my mind. And obviously our incredible, you know, stats that we would get churned out by Tips. I don't know if you know Tips, Chris Jackson. His real name is Tips, so you can ask him that on the next show, by the way. But yeah, it gives us a great chance to truly be successful.
You're listening to Net Live here on the VolleyballNetwork.com. We're catching up with three-time Olympian and gold medalist Tom Hoff. Tom, you talked about your current job and where you are at the moment supporting your family. And last year you spent a lot of time with the national team as a coach, and you ended up going to world championships and sitting on the bench and kind of getting a different perspective on the team and on playing. Talk about that experience versus being a player on the team, and then also why you chose to pursue a different route than coaching.
Yeah, the experience, obviously being in the gym, resonated deeply within me. Obviously, a lot of those guys on the team when I was coaching, and there are still there, are guys that I played a lot with. I've seen come up through, let's say, younger, more inexperienced times. So it's extremely special to see how they're developing into terrific players and to be such a more developed, bigger part of the team. I think that's an awesome ability to just see players develop into the team and want to take on more responsibility. And obviously the right, you know, my opportunity afforded to me to be on the bench as one of the assistants was just a great opportunity that I did not want to pass up. It was, you know, right before me. And I thank the staff at the national team for doing that. And I did enjoy it. I loved it. But obviously we have a lot of downtime where when I was a player, I would go overseas, and I was not going overseas, and there isn't a whole lot to do during the winter months as a coach to really drive and affect the player's performance, which for me is probably the strongest attribute that I brought to our staff. Is just I knew the guys, and to not be around them, I just didn't bring as much value as I could to the team. And that in turn drives my mind crazy, because I really don't feel like I'm doing too much. And I'm a guy who likes to be constantly busy and driven. And that really kind of was the impetus of getting me into something where I was in an environment where I was constantly needed and leaned upon and required for responsibilities, and hopefully, you know, ever growing responsibilities. And that's really why I kind of explored some different options. And it wasn't, you know, people mentioned it because I didn't love the game anymore. I don't. I still love the game with the same passion. That enthusiasm reaches out into me through introducing kids around my area to the game of volleyball. It's not because I don't, you know, love it. Unfortunately, I don't think the timing maybe was the best for me, and winning and then not having that goal in my life. I wanted something that really consumed me, and you know, I found it here.
Tom, we appreciate you spending the time with us here in the middle of your workday. And one last question here for the show. If you were going to sit down with one guy that you played with through your career and have lunch, who would you choose to sit down?
Who would I choose to sit down with? I guess I would have to choose, let's say, am I getting like pulled on this for like current players? Obviously, I've got, you know, a lot of good friends early and late. Let's go with someone I haven't seen and talked to in a long time, the Human Triangle. I think I would like to hang out with Lambo a little bit. Lambo, if you're out there, give me a call. I know we're too close. So we were close, actually. We met each other when he was from Hawaii and I was from Chicago, and he was always saying I was watching American Gladiators, and I was looking at him like, this guy is just some, you know, I was telling my mom, this is a weird-looking guy from Hawaii who's unbelievably good at volleyball, and we're roommates. You know, it was kind of like the odd couple. And we had a long, long relationship, and obviously Mike went on to different success on the beach and stuff, and I'd love to get in touch with him again.
The Human Triangle. I don't think we've come up with that nickname here for a long, long time. Mike Lambert, known as that. Yeah. Wide from the waist to the shoulders. Good stuff.
Yep.
DJ Roche, spin it up. Tom Hoff, you killed it. Thanks for coming on the show. Great stuff.
I do appreciate it. Yep. Thank you very much, guys. I appreciate it and look forward to the next opportunity.
All right. Well, we'll talk to you again soon. Thanks, Tom.
Okay. Thanks, guys. Take care. Bye-bye.
Gold medalist Tom Hoff here on the Net Live.
Nothing but the best on this show.
Hey, you want the top people in the sport, you're not going anywhere else.
Because I can't.
There's nowhere else to go. If they had somewhere else to go, they would go there, but they can only come here.
Better for us.
Hey, we'll be right back here on the Net Live, coming back to wrap it up. Your calls, 347-677-1525. Anything to say about anyone, just remember Kent Steffes, Reed's not here this week.
Questioning my musical choices?
No, I'm just whenever I hear James Brown, I can't help but think of Eddie Murphy and the Celebrity Hot Tub Party.
Classic.
Yeah. Dr. Joy's brother's going to be joining James in the hot tub. If I get in the hot tub, it's going to make me wet. Yeah!
Oh, that's a great.
It's not a bad thing.
Best of Eddie Murphy, Saturday Night Live. Super hilarious. Always makes me think of James Brown. And the other one is about the Rumble in the Jungle. When We Were Kings. You ever see that movie?
Nope, not with you.
Oh, man. Great movie. When We Were Kings. It's all about the Rumble in the Jungle between Foreman and Ali.
Do I need to go home and Netflix that now?
Most certainly. Most certainly. An incredible film. And a lot of James Brown going, "Hoo, good God." So I'm thinking of the right film.
He was in Rocky. I remember that. He came in and sang Apollo's intro.
That's right.
Yep.
I like some James Brown, man. He's crazy. Absolutely crazy.
Was crazy.
Was. Yes. Exactly. Hey, great stuff from Tom Hoff.
No doubt.
Talking about his career, about life, about transition. He does have 5 girls, not 16. Just throwing it out there. But 5 girls at home. I hope he has a really good herd of cattle. Maybe sheep. That's a lot of dowries.
I will say, out of all the great information he gave, the one thing I took away from it was that if I'm ever in a life-threatening situation with you, you are off and running on your own. You even said yourself you were out of the water, chest high, not going back to save your friends. You were out of the water as quickly as possible.
Well, it wasn't a shark attack. I mean, a couple of jellyfish.
Did you know they were jellyfish at the time?
No, we didn't.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, we did. I'm telling you, Tom, well, it did look like somebody had beat him with an electrical cord. It looked awful. We went and got our trainer, Margie, and we brought her back down. We tried to keep it on the hush-hush, right? Try and keep it on the DL that this has just happened. Tom's in the shower, and everyone knows the treatment for jellyfish stings. I saw it up on the chat board. You got to pee on yourself. That's what you're supposed to do to neutralize the enzymes or whatever's going on there, right? And so Tom is just struggling. He comes out, and he looks horrible. He feels bad. He had so many stings. He felt terrible. So we try and keep it hush-hush to ourselves. Well, the coaching staff eventually found out.
Of course.
And was very happy with what had gone on.
Were there repercussions besides having your body stung all over from the coaching staff?
We didn't get kicked off a bus that time, so I'm not sure what else.
That time.
I don't remember all the way back. You know, one of the things I think about with Tom, and I think you hear it in what he says and the way he thinks about the game and approaches his life now in a new job and a new career, is the transition and the maturation of Tom through that. He's always a very serious guy. I mean, we did lots of fun stuff. We played video games, cards, all that good stuff. But I think you saw in Tom really the maturation of a man late in his career and the understanding of team concept and how to dissect your opponents and how to treat your own team and the importance of how things were handled internally off the court, whether it be travel or prize money or interpersonal relationships or conflict, which inevitably comes up when you have 20 guys in there hyper-competitive, competing for spots and stuff and gear and everything else. But I think this was a guy who really filled that captain role in a way that was so necessary. And he didn't play as much his last year. Played a little bit. Came in against Poland in World League when the United States won World League 10 days before the Olympic Games in 2008. And played very well, blocked the ball, sided out. But Tom just didn't have the physical capability with some back injuries and some other things to play all the time. But what he did off the court and in between matches and between practices and in training blocks and the way he handled himself and that role of captain was a huge part of the success of that team.
What I found interesting was his difficulty with the transition after volleyball. He'd been focused on winning a gold medal, he said, for 20-some-odd years. And then you get that, and you get it at a young age. There's a lot of life left to live.
You don't think so when you're playing because you feel like you're getting old,
of course,
coming to the end of something, but that's a great point.
A lot of life left to live.
And I think that that's what a lot of athletes struggle with, whether they win a gold medal or not. If you get to a professional level, you play it for a living for a number of years, and you play through your 20s and your 30s. And what you find when you come out is that your friends have spent their 20s and 30s working the hard hours you worked, but they now have a career that's going to pay off for 25 years. They have work experience. You don't.
No.
Someone need to hit a high ball in an office?
I'm your man.
Yeah. Yeah. What can you do? What marketable skills do you have? Well, I can crush a high ball. Anyone need that? How about a TPS report? Can you fill that out? No, I don't.
I'm great at StarCraft or whatever that game was.
Yeah, StarCraft, exactly. So I think parsing that is a problem.
I was at.
I'm still doing it here.
I was at Eric Fenoy Moana's 40th birthday.
Yes.
And his wife had put a lovely video montage together of like his life leading up to that point, and obviously the gold medal was involved. And he got on the microphone afterwards, and his speech was literally like, thanks, everybody, for coming out. I had a great life. Like, his life was over. Like, he didn't know what he was going to do.
It was a funeral.
Yeah, he didn't know what he was going to do from that point on. And, you know, I looked at the guy afterwards. I'm like, hey, guy, you're only 40. Your life's not over. Yes, you've accomplished a lot. There's still plenty to go.
Right.
You may not be in the public eye. You may not get a gold medal for it. But he was. He was, you know, he was. It was a little bit of a depressing speech. And I know I'm laughing about it. And I was laughing then because I was like, you don't need to be sad about it.
It's an odd thing.
I can't imagine.
It's an odd thing to dedicate your life to something you know has a definite end before your own death.
Yeah, an early end.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that if you play forever, forever in the world of sports, you'll play to 40. Forever.
Yeah, whenever Reed retires, is he going to have the same type of speech too?
Oh, that it's over?
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll recount all the great things he did, and then maybe... You
know, he'll be like, start crying, and it'll be like, my life's over now.
We'll put an urn on the mantle, so you may as well jump in it, fella. It's over.
Just get in the box.
Well, hey, we had a show full of information. This is a re-listen show for me. Get back and hear what Steve Lendecky had to say about the sport of volleyball. Obviously, he's just trying to digest the AVP news. But the AVP back, Steve Lendecky will undoubtedly have more reaction to that as he and the Corona Light Wide Open group try and digest the AVP's role and how they're trying to push forward the sport. Albert Hanneman, owner of the NBL, came on and indicated he's not very happy with what's gone on so far. See how that all plays out. And the AVP has just put this information out there. I think they're waiting to see how the dust settles. And we'll endeavor to get someone on. We invited several people from the organization to join us here today. They refused to.
There'll be more talk about that next week.
Oh, yes.
First NVL tournaments next weekend. We'll have talk about that, see how that goes.
May 2021 in Baltimore.
Heard a rumor that Bruno Mars is playing at the tournament.
Ooh.
Because he could play Lazy Days. Now, that would be a beach theme song.
Is it
a beach theme song for you, Kevin. There you go. You
is it a Mediterranean-style festival?
We'll find out.
Yeah. There's you heard Steve talk about it, too. Live music. It's got to be a party with a volleyball tournament rather than a volleyball tournament with a party.
You know, when I first started with the AVP, they wanted to mimic the FIVB with music after the ball hits the ground.
Sure.
And
girls.
It's a great idea. But people do not rage in the United States like they rage overseas.
It's watched like tennis. Volleyball. Watched like tennis.
Now, you can still have a music atmosphere because I need a job, and I'll be more than happy to play music on the beach for you.
That's right.
But for 8 straight hours, people are not going to be standing up in the sun, clapping their bangers, singing the lyrics to every single song. It's just not going to happen.
No.
Not here.
Hang on, Sloopy, if you were at Ohio State.
Exactly.
And they would do that.
Yes, they would.
They would do that for 8 hours.
Yes, for sure.
Well, hey, another big week coming up. We'll have more great guests for you here in the sport. We're looking at getting Paula Weishoff. Give us a little national team preview. We'll look at getting a national team men's preview. Paula is working with the women. And we'll have certainly, I'm sure, great information about that group of 38 women in the gym. My goodness. And the national team is about to get underway. World League starting up in about 2 weeks here. United States out of town for 3 weekends in a row. And then back in the United States, 3 weekends in a row. Going to be Chicago, Tulsa, and Long Beach.
Right. Are we here going to Long Beach? And by we, I mean, do I get to go with the Net Live? Because...
I can get you a ticket.
Thanks, buddy.
I can hook you up.
I mean, nobody will think I'm with the Net Live because I'm 5'9 and a half. They'll be like, you're not involved in volleyball.
People know you now.
Okay.
Just people know you.
They should.
If you had Jen Kessie on your arm, people might know you a little bit better, but that ain't going to happen, my friend.
Oh, boy.
You'll be standing next to the guy standing with Jen Kessie. That's what you'll
fine.
Be doing.
That's whatever you need to get to yourself to sleep at night.
Hey, it's been fun. Geeter was here. He'll be back. Reed was around. He's in practice. DJ Roche and I held down the fort. Send us a note, thenetlive@gmail.com. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/thenetlive. We want to hear from you out there, the listeners of this show. What do you want to know about? Who do you want to talk to? Who should we get as a guest? We'll get you anybody you want. For DJ Roche, I'm Kevin. It's The Net Live. We'll see you next week. Be good people. Yeah.